Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Cammie McCormick.
On this vote, the yeas are 263, the nays are 171. The motion is adopted.
The House passed that huge financial bailout plan after all, although many lawmakers still had their doubts and couldn't bring themselves to support it. Republican David Dreyer of California.
I'm voting no. I'm voting no to a bailout for Wall Street. I'm voting no to golden parachutes for those bums who've gotten us into this situation.
But House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said there wasn't much choice.
We were dealt a bad hand. We made the most of it. I think the American people will benefit from it.
And from the presidential candidates, Barack Obama in Glenside, Pennsylvania.
I'm glad to see that we finally got this dealt with.
And from John McCain.
This rescue bill isn't perfect, and it's an outrage that it's even necessary. But we have to stop the damage to our economy done by corrupt and incompetent practices on Wall Street and in Washington.
Will the plan work? There is growing skepticism today after a slew of bad reports showing the economy in or near recession. Here's CBS News correspondent Anthony Mason.
Congress needed to pass some kind of rescue package, but the reality is the train had already left the station on the credit crisis. Lots of businesses are struggling to get the money they need to keep going, which in the near term, in the next few months, means they're going to have to lay off people. Some will have to close. That will trickle through the economy. You'll see job numbers as bad as what we've seen this month, probably for the next 6 months.
And the credit crunch isn't hurting just businesses. California's worried it can't get short-term loans to cover basic operating costs. CBS News correspondent Ben Tracy has a look at the problem.
The sales and income tax are what kind of filled the state's coffers. But in California, because it's so big, every year the state has to take out money to get things rolling at the beginning of the year before they collect enough tax revenue to pay off those loans. The problem this year is it's impossible for the state to get loans because the credit market is so tight.
Unless it can secure loans, California could run out of cash late this month. Investigators are looking into the possibility that bad weather could have led to the crash of billionaire Steve Fawcett's plane.
We have a staff meteorologist that will be working on his analysis of what the potential weather conditions would have been.
And the NTSB's Mark Rosinger, the wreckage of Fawcett's plane was found in California's Sierra Nevada this week, a year after he vanished. The Air Force is ordering immediate inspections of some of its A-10 aircraft. There's been an increase in the number of cracks found in the wings. And a Las Vegas jury is deliberating whether O.J. Simpson and a co-defendant robbed two sports memorabilia dealers at gunpoint. Deliberations began 13 years to the day after Simpson was acquitted of killing his ex-wife and her friend Ron Goldman. On Wall Street, the Dow was off 157. This is CBS News.
Referrals. Simple word, right? To a small business, referrals are solid gold. So how do you stir them up? Email marketing from ConstantContact.com. With Constant Contact, you get easy-to-use templates to showcase your business with photos and coupons. And best of all, it's easy for your customers to pass them along to others. In other words, help you generate the almighty referral. Plans as low as $15 a month. Get your free 60-day trial at ConstantContact.com. And let the referrals begin.
Imagine all the possibilities for your next painting project. Now imagine saving up to 25% too. From October 2nd through the 6th, save at your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams paint store. Save up to 25% on exceptional Sherwin-Williams paint, stain, wall coverings, and more. But don't wait. Hurry in and save. Only at Sherwin-Williams. For painting, decorating, and great savings. At Sherwin-Williams. For a store near you, visit Sherwin-Williams.com. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Philadelphia landlord may have placed cameras throughout his apartments for years to secretly tape female tenants. Steve Tawa of KYW reports.
Montgomery County, Pennsylvania District Attorney Risa Furman alleges 45-year-old Thomas Daly hid cameras in apartments he owned in Norristown, Pennsylvania.
We were flooded with new victims coming in.
Daly is now accused of secretly videotaping at least 34 female tenants. Investigators say the cameras were hidden in bedrooms, bathrooms, and living rooms behind mirrors and ceiling fans and cabinets, sometimes automatically activated by a light switch. Authorities say the images were fed into his home computer. Investigators believe the landlord's peeping span 20 years, pointing to evidence of both old-fashioned VHS tapes as well as digital DVDs. Steve Tawa, CBS News, Philadelphia.
The John McCain campaign released running mate Sarah Palin's tax returns today. She and her husband had a gross income of nearly $170,000 and paid $25,000 in taxes. I'm Cammie McCormick, CBS News.
You ever have one of those days where everything goes right? First, I get the best parking space at work. Tonight, I have a date with the very lovely Rachel. And today, I gave a killer presentation in Sydney, finalized the contract in London, and demoed our new product in Boston. Online, from my desk, with WebEx. WebEx lets me take meetings and give presentations from my desk. I just talk to clients on the phone, and they watch what's happening on my desktop from their desktop. So I can travel the world and still be here for my date tonight with Rachel.
Travel less, meet online. Go to WebEx.com and try WebEx free. Just click the radio graphic and enter promo code 505 to get a free trial and a free webcam, too. Remember that code, 505. To qualify for the free webcam, WebEx, now part of Cisco and used by more than 5.5 million people every month. Give it a try, free. Go to WebEx.com and enter the promo code 505. WEBEX.com. Free webcams available while supplies last. Terms and restrictions apply. See website for details.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B. And be part of Peter B.'s America.
I didn't get any sweeteners out of the bailout. Oh, well. Welcome to a fresh edition of the Peter B. Collins Show, originating in San Francisco. Our signal travels from Big Sur on the California coast all the way to the Canadian border. Great to have you listening, wherever you are, and whatever device you use. Lots to talk about on the program today, and rare visits from some Republicans. That's right. In a moment, Bob Perry will join us. Robert Perry from ConsortiumNews.com. Later this hour, Barry Fathom. He's a California attorney who's written many of the initiatives and ballot measures that have, been approved or rejected by voters over the years. He's now working on changing the way we elect our president, bypassing the Electoral College, and it's called National Popular Vote. He'll be joined by Derek Cressman from Common Cause of California. Next hour, we're going to spend the entire hour talking about the Constitution and how the Bush administration has attacked it, diminished its role. Bruce Fein, a principled Republican and a true defender of the Constitution, has a new book out called Constitutional Peril, The Life and Death Struggle for Our Constitution and Democracy. And he's a solid conservative, but he's not afraid to criticize Bush and Cheney. He's called for their impeachment. It'll be a lively conversation coming up next hour. Then, as Brad Friedman joins us per usual in our third and final hour today, we'll talk about election integrity. And Republican John Fund, who writes for the Wall Street Journal, is going to talk about his updated edition of the book called Stealing Elections, How Voter Fraud Threatens Our Democracy. And you know that Brad and I believe that voter fraud is used as a smokescreen to cover election fraud, and to also cover some of the Republican tactics of voter suppression. So expect a lively conversation with Brad and John Fund and me coming up in our third hour today. You can join this conversation if you're listening live here on Friday. 888-5-PETER-B is my toll-free number. 888-573-8372. And if you're one of our fine listeners in Portland, Seattle, or Missoula, listening on the weekend or late night on Green 960 in San Francisco, you can always email me, peter@peterbcollins.com. Robert Perry, longtime investigative reporter, helped us understand Iran-Contra and many of the stories back in the 80s. He publishes now at consortiumnews.com. His most recent book, Neck Deep, The Disastrous Presidency of George W. Bush. Bob, how are you doing today?
Pretty good, Peter. How are you?
Well, you know, I didn't get any sweeteners out of the bailout. I'm really feeling left behind.
There are no tax breaks in there for you?
No. No, I mean, we're going to talk, I want to talk in particular about the Wooden Arrows tax break, but racetracks, auto racetracks got a sweetener. The senator from Bacardi, Mel Martinez, got a $192 million tax break for rum producers. There are tax breaks for wool producers. A nice one, a tax write-off for people who are going to get a settlement in the Exxon Valdez case. And also they are offering parity for mental health care and insurance. Nice sweeteners, but, well, maybe someday I'll be able to take advantage of the mental health part of it.
And amazingly, there was very little there mentioned about foreclosures on houses.
Right, yeah. Well, I do want to single out for praise a congressman who represents some of our listeners. That's Peter DeFazio from Oregon, a Democrat. And despite the efforts to buy his vote, with the special tax break for cedar shafts for arrows, as in bows and arrows.
Right.
This is a company out of Myrtle Point, Oregon, that wanted a break. And so the Democratic leadership inserted that into this bill, hoping to buy Peter DeFazio's vote. And he has led a group of progressives challenging this trickle-down, top-down Wall Street bailout. And he's offered substitute legislation that hasn't been well-received by the leadership for what I would call a bottom-up, a trickle-up approach that I support. So kudos to Peter DeFazio. He can't be bought. But the final vote Friday was 263 to 171. And they upped the ante with 172 Democrats voting in favor, 91 Republicans in favor. And that's quite a turnabout just in a four-day period, isn't it, Bob?
Right. I guess $150 billion will buy you something, huh?
I guess so. Yeah, it's what it took to get this package through. And, of course, the original vote in the House was 228 to 205. So they were able to pick up more than 35 votes there. And that just shows you the power of the hysteria and the sweeteners. But bottom line, Bob Perry, I don't have any confidence that this attempt is going to do any good. And I feel like we're going to be back with a lame duck session after the election or in late January trying to offer more bailouts to more failed financial institutions.
Well, I think the bottom line is that no one really knows, and that is the scary bottom line of how bad this mess is that the nation got itself into with the Wall Street bankers betting recklessly on securities they really didn't know what they were valued at. So you have that, but I think the other interesting point here is that that really kind of also depends on who becomes the next president, because as much as Secretary Paulson may want to spend this money, he's talking about doing it at about a $50 billion a month clip, which means that you really can't get through the $700 billion by the time he's out. So it will either be the Treasury Secretary for Obama or for McCain who would probably have a lot of say as to what actually happens with his money.
Mm-hmm. And what's your sense of Barack Obama here as he prepared to vote for this? He gave a powerful populist speech in La Crosse, Wisconsin on Wednesday. And I, you know, while I disagree with his decision to vote for it, I think I understand the political calculations. And beyond that, I think that he gave a powerful speech addressing many of the other issues of the economy that need to be fixed or modified as we move forward. What's your take, Bob?
Well, it's always hard to know what Democrats do once they get elected. We saw that in 2006, where many people were hopeful that putting the Democrats in would seriously change some policies, and it turned out that despite some improvement, it really didn't. And I think that is most likely the case if Obama wins that there may be some improvements and maybe some significant ones. But I think anyone who's expecting a real change in direction from the top would be disappointed. There's also the problem in this country that we don't really have the media infrastructure that we've talked about sometime to make the case to enough Americans about what these alternatives might be. And that has a couple of effects. One, it doesn't build enough of the support among the population, allows the right wing to sell whatever they want to sell. But it also limits what some even honest, decent politicians feel they can do. They start making compromises because they feel the public won't be behind them or they'll be attacked on Fox News too heavily. So we end up in this dilemma in which the politicians don't think they have the popular support and the popular and then the people aren't being informed adequately about what else could be done, and that's played very much into the hands of the neocons and the and the conservatives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and I do believe politically the Democrats have dodged the biggest bullet here, which was that if this had passed primarily, you know, with Democratic support, without at least the fig leaf of, 91 Republicans, they really would have been hung out there with this, well, with their fingerprints all over it.
Right, but I think most Americans will see this as the consequence of the Bush policies, and I think that's a strong argument that we've seen the Obama campaign making, and I think it resonates. It's been a tough one because it really goes against all the propaganda from Ronald Reagan in 1980 on through, the idea that the government is not the solution, the government is the problem.
Well, and Sarah Palin was echoing that last night, saying, government's the problem, that's why I want to go to Washington and be part of the problem.
Well, but, you know, of course, the problem is that, the markets don't act the way some on the right pretend they do, that they can simply self-regulate. And this whole concept of self-regulation has been a killer for this country. And if you want to look at why the nation's sort of ponying up $700 billion, it's a big part of it is that these various banks and other institutions were not adequately regulated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're going to take a break and return with Robert Perry. We'll talk about Thursday night's vice presidential debate between Biden and Palin. If you'd like to join us with a comment, lines are open at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. Read Robert Perry's work at consortiumnews.com. And that's also where Ray McGovern's piece about Joe Biden has appeared this week. We spoke with Ray on the program yesterday. More in a moment here on the Peter B. Collins Show. KRXA 540. Visit our website at KRXA540.com. The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff, Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Central Coast Running in Santa Cruz is the number one headquarters for runners. Whether you're a novice or a serious competitor, Central Coast Running has everything you need, from shoes to sportswear. Locally owned and operated by UC Santa Cruz cross-country coach Adam Booth, Central Coast Running should be your first stop before you run. Here's Adam with a tip on running.
When you work out or run lately, have your knees and shins been hurting? How old are your shoes? A year? 2 years? The aches and pains could be your body's way of saying your shoes are toast. Running shoes usually last for around 400 miles worth of wear. If you average a few miles a few days per week, you're going to wear out those shoes in 6 to 8 months. Hi, this is Adam at Central Coast Running. Bring your old shoes in the store so we can see how they're doing. We'll let you know how much life they have left and perform a full gait analysis if it's time for a new pair. We don't want to sell you a pair of shoes if you don't need them, but we do want to help let you know if your shoes are good for you. Stop in and let us help keep you feeling good.
Central Coast Running, located in the Gateway Plaza near the corner of Highway 1 and River Street in Santa Cruz.
Want to meet a health care provider that will give you the time to talk about your health issues and actually listen intently to you? Looking for an alternative to the pill-popping culture created by the megaceutical companies? Do you have chronic pain, headaches, depression, allergies, or any other unresolved health concerns? Give Optimal Health a try. Hi, I'm Glenn Sadowski, licensed acupuncturist at Optimal Health Acupuncture in Monterey at 655-3208. I'll be at the Pilgrim's Way Bookstore in downtown Carmel on the 2nd and 4th Sundays of October from 12 to 3. Reserve your space for an absolutely free 15-minute diagnostic evaluation, a wonderful opportunity to make an informed decision on your well-being. Call Optimal Health Acupuncture at 655-3208 today. Times are limited. Optimal Health, where you receive good medicine with great results. Think for yourself at Optimal Health.
Peter B. Collins Show. And we continue with Robert Perry from ConsortiumNews.com. Bob, I wanted to get your reaction to the vice presidential debate on Thursday night. I thought Joe Biden did okay, and I do think that Sarah Palin survived the doubts that many people, including some Republicans, had expressed about her. She recited her rehearsed material pretty well. Even the line about Joe, there you go again. Certainly a reprise of a Ronald Reagan line that a lot of Republicans liked. And let me start, though, because I really think that Gwen Ifill of PBS was successfully intimidated by the pushback from the McCain campaign. I can only give her a C-plus for her the way she managed the debate. And John in McKinleyville wrote, she blew it by not bringing up Social Security. Well, I've got a list to add to that. They didn't discuss torture. They didn't talk about Gitmo. They didn't talk about FISA. They didn't talk about any of her history, the Alaska issues of Troopergate, and her vast inexperience is the way I would put it. So I think there was a lot missing from that debate.
Oh, I think that's exactly correct. I do think, though, that I think she was almost incomprehensible at points. And I spent some of the day reading some of the commentary from the talking heads, especially the neoconservatives, who were oohing and aahing over her performance. And it just wasn't the same debate that I watched. There was that really marvelous moment when she talked about nuclear destruction as the be all and end all for many people on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure most of us would consider our incineration as the be all and end all. So there was this kind of goofy quality to her presentation that I found unnerving, mm-hmm. and I'm not sure if I'm alone in that. At a time when the nation has two open-ended wars going and a financial crisis, I'm not sure Americans were looking for chatter about Joe's six-pack and shout-outs to third-grade classes.
Yeah.
I think they were looking for something more substantive, and I agree that that Gwen Ifill did not. She did not press in on many of these points. I think she did okay in the sense that she asked rather gentle sort of questions that were fairly open-ended. And she was not very strict about trying to get answers. That's obviously a case where Katie Couric did have success with Palin by just pressing to get specifics on the questions. And when pressed, Palin has failed to provide anything like specifics, even questions like, what newspapers do you read?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also, she seemed unfamiliar with the concept of an Achilles heel. Maybe she thought that was a specific kind of pump. and she actually, you know, just blurted out that I'm not going to answer the questions the way maybe the moderator and my opponent want. She was just programmed that when it was her turn to talk, she would go to the next rehearsed talking point. And the, you know, amount of times that her eyes were looking down at notes or at some kind of a script she was allowed to bring to the debate showed just how rehearsed it was and, you know, how little she was really responding to the actual situation there.
Yeah, my guess is that Obama was the sort of winner in that debate because he had picked Biden, and for all Biden's shortcomings, and we certainly write about them in Consortium News, and you've talked about them,
mm-hmm.
he was more reassuring in the sense that he seemed to know what he was talking about. He seemed to have a good temperament. He wasn't like McCain. He wasn't angry. He responded politely, and he was the kind of person you might see as a good, wise counselor to a president, or if necessary, be president himself. By contrast, you had Sarah Palin, who, while yes, she didn't melt down, she didn't collapse. It's always odd to me, people expect people to fall down or something. They say they're still standing at the end of the debate.
Mm-hmm.
I presume that's sort of a very minimal standard. But she really didn't, at least to me, convey a sense of seriousness, of gravitas.
Mm-hmm.
It was almost the opposite. And I think Americans probably are looking for a little bit of gravitas at this kind of moment.
Mm-hmm. Interesting, in some of the instant polling and the focus groups that were conducted, I have one in front of me from HCD Research, and they polled independents. And it was interesting to see because, if for the most part, the partisans, Republicans tilted 3-1 for Palin, and Democrats were about 4-1 for Joe Biden. But on the economic meltdown, independents went 3-1 for Biden. Even higher numbers, 72-28 on tax issues. The bankruptcy bill, 69-31 for independents. Climate change, 64-36. Same-sex marriage, 65-35. Iraq exit strategy, 68-32, and the rest of it is pretty consistent. So it shows that among those who might have been moved by the debate, it was almost 3-1 in Biden's favor.
Right, and that would be, I think, sort of right. That would seem to make a lot of sense. And I think the pundits who came on right after the debate, and some of these people who've been writing about it today, really missed that. There's either cowardice because they don't want to stand up to the conservatives, or they're conservatives and they want to make the best out of this for partisan reasons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anything else you'd like to add, Bob, that you observed?
Well, I do think it's always amazing, though, how wrong the news media can be on issues like this. There is almost a sense of fear about being seen as elitist, so there's a bending over backwards when someone acts like Palin did, or years ago like George W. Bush did. It's
yeah.
very much the same idea of almost a new version of George W. Bush as the regular guy, now it's the regular gal.
Yeah, it is breathtaking that they adopt that posture and that the media really just accepts it without any critical thinking. Bob, thank you very much. Always great to talk with you, and we'll do it again next week.
Thank you, Peter.
Visit consortiumnews.com and read more of Robert Perry's work. We're going to take a break and continue. Would you like to see the president elected by popular vote, bypassing the archaic Electoral College? Well, Barry Fathom, an attorney from NationalPopularVote.com, and Derek Cressman from Common Cause will join me next to talk about it here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The Osgood File, sponsored in part by the American Society of Retina Specialists and Genentech. I'm Charles Osgood. In New York City, there's an elegant private club just off Park Avenue. The food is excellent, but food and elegance are not what it's famous for. What the Friars Club is famous for is laughs.
L'chaim. L'chaim means to life. I have a cousin who's serving Chaim now in San Quentin.
That's Freddie Roman, the dean of the club. Pat Cooper is there a lot, too. What did Cooper learn at the Friars Club?
I learned that you have to have a flow. You could tell the oldest joke 100 times like Henny Youngman. You know, take my wife, please. He said it 1,000,000 times and they still laugh at it. But there's a flow, there's a charisma, there's a persona about the comic.
We'll learn a lesson or two on our TV program this Sunday morning. A sneak preview after this. Did you know that the most common cause of blindness in people age 60 and over is a chronic condition called wet age-related macular degeneration, or AMD? Now, this doesn't happen overnight ordinarily, but in some people it can develop very quickly. It begins with symptoms including wavy lines, hazy vision, and blurriness. So if you're not seeing clearly, by all means see an eye doctor. Get checked out right away, because early detection followed by proper treatment by a retina specialist is key. This message was brought to you by the American Society of Retina Specialists and Genentech.
Too much at once can sometimes get in the way of beautiful music. It's the same with driving. When there's too much on the road, things aren't so pleasant. And since one CSX train reduces traffic congestion by carrying a load of 280 trucks, fewer things will get in the way of you having a smooth drive. To learn more, go to CSX.com. CSX, how tomorrow moves.
Once when Bruce Willis was a young, up-and-coming actor, he was roasted at the Friars Club by Milton Berle.
Laugh it up, please. I laugh when you act.
Berle once said the average age of a Friars Club member is deceased. Freddie Roman.
I looked around the dining room and I saw people my age and older. And while we were still vibrant, there was going to be a time where, when our generation was about at it, the club had a serious possibility of not being able to continue.
So now young comics like John Saliano, Richard Schlesinger asked him.
I mean, when you stood up and looked out on the audience, what did you think?
My first impression was, I hope they have a defibrillator here. You know, I mean, but, I mean,
it was an easy pitch.
Matt Cooper says if you're a comic, you belong at the Friars Club.
I'm the last of me. When I'm gone, it's over. There's no more Pat Coopers. There's no more Milton Berles. These young guys got to turn around and make it important. They're in a craft to make people laugh as a gift.
More when I see you on the television come Sunday morning on CBS. This is Charles Osgood on the CBS Radio Network.
The patient's not responding to the treatment.
I know. That imaginary jingle telling him to go where again?
Coffeetopia.
I've seen this condition before. It is very contagious.
What happened?
Nothing really. Everyone had a cup of coffee and a bagel. Speaking of which, let's go have a cup.
Where should we go?
Coffee, coffee, coffeetopia.
What was that?
And so, it begins again.
For the best coffee, tea, or smoothies in the Monterey Bay Area, visit Coffeetopia. With 3 locations in Santa Cruz, 3701 Portola Drive near Pleasure Point, 1723 Mission Street on the west side, and the newest Coffeetopia at 1443 Capitola Road in the Live Oak area. Coffeetopia is also the oldest internet cafe in Santa Cruz, with wireless and by-the-minute computer stations. Other places use ice as fillers for their smoothies, but not Coffeetopia. They use all fruit and juices when making their delicious smoothies, and they also feature tropical, high-energy, acai smoothies, bagels, and fresh baked goods.
Coffee, coffee, Coffeetopia.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Presidential elections.
I plan distractions to divert attention from the action behind the scenes. Like a game of chess when the house is a mess, or a petty money squabble when your marriage is in trouble, or a football game when there's rioting in the streets.
Would presidential elections be less of a distraction if the popular vote carried the day? It's a very powerful question that was underscored by Bush v. Gore, the 2000 election. And if you actually believe the forensic analysis of the Ohio vote in 2004, John Kerry did win the popular vote. He should have won the electoral vote, too, and I believe that in that case the system might have worked. But there's an interesting movement to bypass the requirement to use the Electoral College to select our president by using a state-by-state approach to build a consensus that the popular vote would determine the allocation of electoral votes in states participating. We have two proponents of this measure to join us today. Barry Fathom is a longtime attorney here in California, and he and his one-time partner, Peter Bagatelos, have written many of the initiatives, ballot measures that voters have accepted or rejected over the years. Barry, great to talk to you again.
Well, good to talk to you, and you're very kind, I'm looking forward to having a chance to talk to you about this particular topic.
Indeed, that's what we're going to discuss today. And Derek Cressman joins us from Common Cause of California. Derek, welcome to the show.
Glad to be here, Peter.
And before we dive into this measure, I just want to congratulate Common Cause and others who worked on the clean money legislation that passed through the legislature this year and was actually not vetoed by Governor Schwarzenegger. And so we're going to have an interesting test case, right, in 2012, where a single statewide office, the Secretary of State, will be run on taxpayer financing. And also the clean money strategy involves other ways of bringing small amounts of contributions in. But, Derek, I want to just applaud you and Lonnie Hancock, the author of that bill, for fighting to get it through and giving us at least a taste of a different way of paying for our elections.
Yeah, thanks, Peter. We're very excited about that, something the Common Cause has been working on for years in California and in other states. Just to be clear, we did have a bill that passed through both houses of the legislature and was signed last week by Governor Schwarzenegger, actually earlier this week.
Mm-hmm.
The next step in that will be it will be presented to voters in the spring primary of 2010.
Oh, I see. It has to be approved by the voters, too. I didn't realize that.
That's right. And then after that step, it will be in place, where, or at least we're hopeful it will be in place, as you mentioned, for the elections in 2012 for Secretary of State.
That's Derek Cressman from Common Cause. Now, Barry Fathom, I want to direct people to the website, nationalpopularvote.com.
Thank you very much. Yep, www.nationalpopularvote. The website really has a lot of great information. It will show you our bill is currently endorsed by some 1,181 state legislators. We've got 439 sponsors in 47 states, and all that information is on the website. We've also put up on the website all the polling that we've done over the last couple of years because, you know, one thing we know is that our proposal, and let me just quickly state what our proposal is.
Please.
Our proposal is a plan that would guarantee the presidency to the candidate who receives the most popular votes in all 50 states.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, since the 50s, the Gallup poll has been polling on the subject matter, and the numbers never dip below 70% in the Gallup poll. There's just no question. I've had an opportunity, I know Derek has, to travel around the country to talk about this topic, but there is no question that the American voters want the President of the United States determined by the national popular vote. Now, you mentioned one of the reasons, which is, you know, voters can't quite understand how in every other election conducted in this country, he or she who gets the most votes wins. They kind of can consider that part of the democratic tradition.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you mentioned 2000. I just want to quickly point out, you know, in 2004, if in the state of Ohio 60,000 votes had switched, Kerry would have won that state even and won the presidency, even though President Bush was ahead by 3.5 million votes nationwide. So there have been a number of close calls, but that's certainly one of the reasons. And then I just actually want to get one other quick reason on the table as to why voters are so upset about it, because this is why we live in California. It's very simple. If you're not a battleground state, which means a state that both parties decided is worth contending for, you don't get to play in the presidential race. And we know that in California that our vote for president does not count. In 2004, voters in two-thirds of the states were just like California. We were totally ignored. So that two-thirds of the money was spent in five states, and over 99% of it was spent in 16 states. And guess what? California was not one of those states.
And, Barry, I talked to you earlier today. You told me you just flew back from Michigan where you're doing some legal election work. And John McCain's campaign has just announced that they're pulling out of Michigan because they can't compete in a winner-take-all format. So they're just going to pull the TV ads down. There'll be no more campaigning there. The offices will be closed. And, essentially, they are ceding the state of Michigan, and they're not going to bother to talk to those voters.
Well, even Karl Rove was quoted the other day saying that there will only be four battleground states at the end of this campaign, that the presidential campaign will come down to those four states. I think Derek Crespin from Common Cause is in a very good position to comment because they've looked at it, the kind of impact that that system has on both turnout and participation. Derek, maybe you want to comment on that.
Go ahead, Derek. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, what it means is that the candidate campaigns, as well as citizens themselves, will be really working to drive turnout in places like Ohio and Florida and Pennsylvania and maybe Virginia this year as a new state. And we see voter turnout in those, you know, so-called swing states or battleground states historically being about 10 points higher than places like here in California or now Michigan, that essentially get written off by one side and take it for granted for the other. They don't have an incentive to reach out to voters. And quite frankly, you know, a good government group at Common Cause, we have a harder time motivating people to vote because they feel like, well, my vote doesn't really matter. I already know which candidate's going to win California. Why should I bother to, you know, take time out of my day to go vote when it's really predetermined here in the state?
Now, I want to talk about the obstacles to implementation here, because I think this is a brilliant approach to this issue. We know that we probably could never get a constitutional amendment passed to impose this plan and bypass or retire the Electoral College system. But this basically turns the Electoral College system into a benign reflection of the popular vote.
Yes. Well, you know what? One way to look at it, Peter, is that what is the Electoral College today? It's a rubber stamp. There's never any surprises when they vote.
Yeah.
So it's a rubber stamp for 50 individual state votes. That's the current system. Under our proposal, the Electoral College stays because, as you pointed out, it needs a federal constitutional amendment to be abolished. But we would just transform it into a rubber stamp for the national popular vote. So, in fact, maybe a very quick description of our proposal, which is based on two provisions of the U.S. Constitution. The Founding Fathers, in their wisdom, decided that states should decide how electoral votes are awarded. So today, 48 states have the exact same law that California has, which is that whoever wins the most votes in the state gets all the electoral votes, winner take all.
Right.
But two states, Maine and Nebraska, have a congressional district method. The point is, though, is that it is a absolute state right issue. However the state wants to determine how to award electoral votes, that's what the U.S. Constitution says. And the second part of the U.S. Constitution is a provision that allows states to enter into agreements with each other. California is in many, many, many of these what are called interstate compacts. There are ones to split up the Colorado River water that that California participates in. But the one that many people may know is Powerball, which is the lottery. But that's an interstate compact where states come together.
Mm-hmm.
So the proposal here is very simple, that states enter into an agreement to award all their electoral votes to whoever wins the most votes in all 50 states. And this agreement only goes into effect when enough states join the agreement that represents 270 electoral votes, which is enough to guarantee the recipient of those 270 electoral votes to be able to guarantee to be elected president of the United States.
If you have a question or comment about electing the president directly by popular vote in the manner that we've just been describing here, give us a call. The two gentlemen are here till the top of the hour. And lines are open at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. Derek Cressman from Common Cause. As I see it, the obstacles are going to be from the small states. And a lot of this goes back to the founding fathers who made this grand compromise essentially, allow the Senate to be represented by two members from every state, regardless of their population. And this was a way to offset the influence of the House of Representatives, which, of course, is population-based. And so isn't the pushback here going to come from small states that say, well, we currently have disproportionate power. Why do we want to give that up?
Well, certainly if you were talking about abolishing the U.S. Senate, you would get some pushback from small states. But that's not the proposal here. And the thing that I think most folks don't realize is that while there is a mathematical advantage to small states in the Electoral College, it's a relatively small advantage, and it's entirely overwhelmed by the dynamic of swing states versus safe states. And as it happens, most of the swing states that get all of the attention and therefore really all of the power are fairly large states. If you think about Ohio and Pennsylvania and Florida, previously Michigan until last week, And actually 12 out of the 13 small states are very safe and are entirely ignored by candidates. And that's why we've actually seen a lot of support for the National Popular Vote Plan among the smaller states. It's passed in Hawaii and in law there. It's passed both chambers of the legislature in Vermont and in Rhode Island. It's passed one house in Maine.
Mm.
So it's a little bit counterintuitive to what people might expect based on their civics, lessons back in high school, but really a lot of support for this in small states.
Barry, what would you like to add on that issue?
Well, Derek hit the nail on the head. Out of 13 small states with four electoral votes or less for the last 20 years, six have been red, six have been blue. So the only battleground state among small states has been New Hampshire. So we kind of view the small states as a poster child. Of all the states in this country, the small states are probably the ones who are most punished by the current system.
Mm.
They see no one, and no one cares about them, and no one visits them or conducts any campaign. Simply, under our proposal, every vote would be equal. So a vote in Rhode Island would be just as important as a vote in Ohio,
mm-hmm.
because it would count the same.
And Barry, one more critical question here. What is the trigger point as to when this would take effect? Because it's prospective until a certain number of states agree
right? Yes. I mean, we're intending to have this in place for the 2012 presidential election. And the when it goes into effect is when enough states join it so that states possessing 270 electoral votes worth of states have joined the compact. Now, how many states will that be? Well, it depends on which states end up joining the compact. Who are the candidates to join that compact? Well, we just talked about 34 states in 2004 who are not battleground states, who were totally left out of the presidential campaign. Our best estimate, it'll be somewhere between 20 to 25 states. So as of today, as Derek indicated, four states have enacted the compact. That represents 50 electoral votes toward the 270. And we are already well on our way to preparing to be involved in a number of states in 2009. So we need to get to 270, and we think we can get there in time for the 2012 election.
All right. That's Barry Fathom. Visit the website nationalpopularvote.com to get full information on this. He's also co-author of a book about this issue. And Derek Cressman from Common Cause is with us. We'll take a break and return for your phone calls. If you have a question or comment, now's the time. 888-5-PETER-B. Make your vote count. 888-573-8372. The Peter B. Collins Show.
Our radio show for the whole family. Dysfunctional family. Stephanie Miller on AM 540 KRXA, 6 a.m. weekdays.
Yeah. Socolo Mexican Restaurant is proud to announce the opening of our newest restaurant in Old Town Salinas, located at 321 Main Street. As with our original location in Pacific Grove, Socolo features Angus beef, handmade tortillas, and the freshest ingredients available. Socolo offers many unique specials like pozole verde, chicken mole, and albondigas. You won't find frozen meats or canned tomatoes at Socolo. Now with two locations to serve you at 321 Main Street in Old Town Salinas, for reservations and takeout, call 424-1047. That's 424-1047. Or if you're on the Monterey Peninsula, visit us at 162 Fountain Avenue in Pacific Grove. Our phone number there is 373-7911. That's 373-7911. Socolo Restaurant, the place to go when you're looking for quality, authentic Mexican food.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, the host of the new show, curiously enough, called The Scott Dick Show, weekdays following the Peter B. Collins Show. Every evening from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll talk about local and regional issues, national and international politics, military and veterans affairs, and anything else that hasn't been lip-smacked to death already. So hang around after the Peter B. Collins Show and tune in to the gift you just can't return, The Scott Dick Show, weekdays, 6 to 8 p.m., where I'll shoot from the lip and take no prisoners.
I need somebody who's in touch with their dark side. I need somebody who's there. They've lived it, you know. That's why I like older women, because you can't spook them. Younger women get uncomfortable very quickly. Older women will stare you down till the end of the night. They'll go with you every inch. They'll look you right in the face and go, "You think you're sick? I'm sick. I'm sicker than you. I'm the sickest. I'll creep you out. Why don't you wait about 5 minutes? We'll see who cries first. Yeah. You're not weird. You're a dork. That's what you are. You think you're all edgy and tough? I'll bite you in the face." My kids are grown. I got nothing to lose. I got nothing to lose. They don't even call me anymore.
That's comedian Andrew Norelli. I'm Richard Stockton, here with a minute from the Planet Cruise Comedy Hour.
PlanetCruise.org.
Want to save money, have fun, and walk a little lighter on the planet? Listen to Tomorrow Matters, talk radio for a better tomorrow, weekdays from 2 to 3 p.m., right here on KRXA 540 AM. Join me, Deborah Lindsay, as we bring in the experts to discuss how to cut energy costs, how to build communities, and how to lower our ecological footprints. It's good for our pocketbooks, and it's good for the planet. And we have to, because tomorrow really does matter.
Time for more on the Peter B. Collins Show. I love this idea about organizing the states so that the popular vote will elect our president, effectively bypassing the archaic Electoral College. Attorney Barry Fathom with us. The website, again, is nationalpopularvote.com. And he has five co-authors in the book Every Vote Equal, a state-based plan for electing the president by national popular vote. And, Barry, tell us who you've identified so far who's opposed to this approach.
Well, you know, no real organized group has raised their head to oppose. I think we've gotten some opposition from folks who think, who at least don't really know that the Constitution permits the states to do what we're talking about. So some folks think or argue that maybe this is an end run around the U.S. Constitution because it's not a federal constitutional amendment to abolish the Electoral College. Of course, our response is that our proposal is based on the two provisions of the U.S. Constitution I talked about, so it's hardly an end run around the Constitution. In general, we have received amazingly good support. And I just want to just quickly bring your attention, though, to one other perhaps phenomena here in California, since we're not a battleground state, which is there was a great article in the Chronicle a couple weeks ago which talked about how both campaigns, both Republicans and Democrats, have websites here in California where you can go that if you want to work for your presidential candidate, they'll help you with airfare or get flights or buses or cars to states where you can go work for your presidential campaign.
And for couch potatoes, they supply you with phone numbers in other parts
exactly
of the country, and you can
right.
just call them up.
That's exactly right, which means I know some of the states like Nevada or states even further east. You might recall in 2004, our governor think he went to Ohio was the closest Republican state that was a battleground state that he could compete in. So, mm-hmm. you know, we have a lot of talent here in California in both parties. And instead of staying home and working for the presidential candidate in their state, they have no choice but to, you know, get on planes, trains, and automobiles and go out of state. And that's, mm-hmm. that's a situation that just makes no sense.
And Derek Cressman from California Common Cause, does this issue find support among all of your different chapters and the national office as well?
Oh, yeah. This is something that is a national priority for Common Cause and that all of our state chapters are quite excited about. I mean, I have to say, I've been working on democracy issues generally, you know, campaign finance reform and ethics and voting issues mm-hmm. Since about 1995. And there's something about this idea of using the national popular vote to elect the president that just seems to strike a chord within people from really all political backgrounds, you know, young, old, what have you. It just, people kind of go, well, yeah, of course. And they're really excited that we've got a way to do that, that's achievable and that's making remarkable progress. You know, we talked about how it's passed in four states, but it's a total of 21 legislative bodies that have passed it just in the past 2 years. And mm-hmm. I haven't really worked on an issue that we've seen that kind of rapid momentum on. So it's yeah. been exciting.
And Barry Fathom, who is funding this drive?
Well, I'm glad to report that we've got contributions from probably over 150 individuals throughout the country. Dr. John Koza, K-O-Z-A, who is the chairman of National Popular Vote, and the gentleman who came up with the idea, this idea of linking these two powers of the U.S. Constitution, has been a big supporter, has provided backing for this. But at this point in time, since our idea has really taken off across the country, we're attracting quite a bit of attention and funding from individuals throughout the country.
And John Koza first got interested in this because he created a board game involving the Electoral College?
Dr. Koza is a historian of presidential politics. I don't think there's a single campaign starting with the first one that he doesn't know about in terms of exactly how it unfolded. So he's uh-huh. really a historian. But it is true, while a student at the University of Michigan, he invented a board game. And if any of your listeners go on eBay, they suppose they can still find it. It's called Consensus. I happen to have a copy of it here in my office, called A Game of Electoral Strategy, which can be played by 2 to 4 candidates. A typical game takes about 75 minutes, is what the instructions say.
Uh-huh.
Several friends and I, a couple years ago, took out the instructions and started to try to play it. After a couple hours, we put it back in the box. didn't play it. When I related that to Dr. Koza, he kind of reacted with, well, why do you think it didn't sell?
Uh-huh.
But he really is, when we say an electoral college hobbyist, he has been interested in the subject matter going back as far as the 60s. So, this idea, to be fair, Dr. Koza has been described by various folks from, you know, brilliant to innovative. The one thing I can tell you is that from a legal point of view, it's on very solid founding.
Mm-hmm.
These two provisions of the U.S. Constitution are what they are. So it really is a brilliant idea that can accomplish what, you know, most of the folks who have tried for the federal constitutional amendment mm-hmm. for the last 30 years, great people like former U.S. Senator Birch Bayh and former Congressman John Anderson, they're all aboard and working to help us with our effort.
All right, let me jump in. I want to take a phone call here. John up in Humboldt listening on KGOE. Go right ahead, John. You're on the air.
Hi. I think that this whole idea of the popular vote's a bad idea. I think just the reverse. The Electoral College should be broken back up into its individual districts, because otherwise rural places, we're left out of the electoral process entirely. You hit the big cities, the populous states, you're elected. You don't have to worry about places like Kansas, Wyoming, Northern California, or Oregon.
Well, I don't think that's quite true. Barry, your response?
Well, let's just do one quick example, because we're here in California. The 4 out of the last 6 governors have been red in a blue state. They didn't win by conducting their campaigns only in Los Angeles and Sacramento and San Francisco. They won because they conducted their campaign in every part of the state. Why? A vote in a rural part of California counts just the same as a vote in Los Angeles. By the way, I might point out, probably a lot cheaper to do a TV ad, for example,
yep.
in a rural area versus Los Angeles. So,
sure is, yeah. Well, gentlemen, I want to thank you very much. Our time's expired here, but I want people to go to the website nationalpopularvote.com, and you can read up on this proposal. Barry Fadum is a proponent of it, and we've been joined this hour, too, by Derek Cressman from Common Cause California. Thank you both.
Thank you very much, Peter.
All
thank
right.
you.
We're going to take a break and return. Bruce Fine, a Republican and a constitutional defender. He's going to join me next hour. I'm looking forward to a lively conversation here on the Peter B. Collins Show, produced in San Francisco by Katrina Rill. Our website is peterbcollins.com.
Are you tired of paying $100 an hour for computer support just for the prompt to return? Hi, I'm Luke Ford, founder and CEO of My Computer Works. Whenever you have a major computer catastrophe or a simple question, give my U.S.-based computer technicians a call, and they'll remotely connect your computer and fix the problem for you. It's safe, secure, and you won't have to let a stranger into your home. Call now to receive 1 month of service free with a membership. Now let's hear from some of our satisfied customers.
They cleaned up the computer, and I sat there and watched everything going on. I was just having a ball.
So the convenience of having My Computer Works connect to my computer right then, fix it for me immediately, is priceless.
I was having a lot of major problems with my computer, and they basically evaluated the computer and went through and eliminated the problems I was having.
Call My Computer Works now, toll-free, 888-629-9618. That's 888-629-9618. 888-629-9618.
My Computer Works. Does yours?
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
It's a done deal now.
On this vote, the yeas are 263, the nays are 171. The motion is adopted.
And quickly signed by President Bush, but stocks close lower.
The job number is the bad news. You want bad news? It doesn't get much uglier than the job number.
This is the CBS World News Roundup, late edition. I'm Bill Whitney. The House today approved the credit market bailout plan that passed the Senate 3-1. CBS News correspondent Tom Foti reports.
The House Republican leader John Boehner, who supported the first financial package that was rejected by most of his members on Monday, used strong words to try to make sure that didn't happen again.
American people sent us here to do our jobs on their behalf. They're counting on us.
And from House Speaker Nancy Pelosi,
if we do not act, hardworking Americans will see the American dream evaporate.
So with the administration given the tools it says it needs to ease the credit crunch,
we hope that this will have an impact in the near term. Hopefully tonight, tomorrow, and the next day.
Democratic House Leader Steny Hoyer. Tom Foti, CBS News, Washington.
Reportedly, it will take the Treasury Department 4 weeks or more to start buying up the distressed mortgage investments clogging the credit system. President Bush welcomed final congressional passage of the bill and quickly signed it.
By coming together on this legislation, we have acted boldly to help prevent the crisis on Wall Street from becoming a crisis in communities across our country.
But the stock market was not reassured. The Dow fell 157 points. The Nasdaq dropped 29. CBS News economics correspondent Anthony Mason says it's a reaction to the Labor Department report that 159,000 jobs were eliminated last month.
This new job number sends an extremely concerning signal, and that is that, you know, what has probably been a recession is now headed into a deep recession for the next few months, if not longer. That's going to be the key question here. We've seen two extremely ugly numbers in the past week. First, the auto sales number, down 25% in September. That's a staggering number. And now this jobs number, which suggests the job cuts were starting even before the credit crunch got really serious.
Now this.
How to show old man winter the door. Step 1. Pick out a new door for 15% off at the Home Depot. Step 2. Get excited. You're about to put a dent in your energy bill. Step 3. Close your beautiful new door. Hear that tighter seal? So does Old Man Winter.
Get 15% off select special order doors and windows and save even more with lower prices on items throughout the store. The Home Depot. You can do it. We can help. Offer ends October 15th. U.S. only. See store for details.
Prices are up. The cost of running your business is up. Everything's up, except your marketing budget. So what's a small business to do? Email marketing to your current customers with ConstantContact.com. With Constant Contact, you get professional-looking email newsletters that keep your customers coming back. Plus, there's a free 60-day trial with plans as low as $15 a month. So even if the economy's down, your sales don't have to be. Put your marketing on the upswing with ConstantContact.com.
The presidential candidates who both supported the bailout bill agreed today that it's only the beginning.
I have to give you some straight talk. This is a tourniquet. It's not a cure. It's not a cure, it's a tourniquet. It'll stop the bleeding. But now we've got to reform the way we do business in Washington, and it's got to be reformed now.
John McCain spoke in Pueblo, Colorado. Barack Obama was in Glenside, Pennsylvania.
We've still got these structural problems. The fundamentals of the economy aren't sound, and we're going to have to do a lot of work moving forward.
The credit crunch has prevented the state of California from borrowing to pay expenses. CBS News correspondent Ben Tracy says it needs $7 billion fast.
The state treasurer was actually on the radio here today in Los Angeles saying that he actually called Bill Gates' office looking for what he called a white knight solution.
Governor Schwarzenegger has put Washington on notice that he might ask for a loan. The holidays will almost certainly not be happy for the nation's retailers. Analyst Bert Flickinger predicts the worst shopping season in nearly two decades.
People will buy for children and grandchildren, but they'll buy less. Typically during the holidays, a shopper will buy for herself or himself. That will not be the case this year.
Did you watch the debate last night? You weren't alone. Nielsen Media Research says nearly 70 million people tuned in for the face-off between Joe Biden and Sarah Palin, making it the most watched vice presidential debate ever. By contrast, the first of three debates between John McCain and Barack Obama drew 52 million viewers. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
Referrals. Simple word, right? To a small business, referrals are solid gold. So how do you stir them up? Email marketing from ConstantContact.com. With Constant Contact, you get easy-to-use templates to showcase your business with photos and coupons. And best of all, it's easy for your customers to pass them along to others. In other words, help you generate the almighty referral. Plans as low as $15 a month. Get your free 60-day trial at ConstantContact.com. And let the referrals begin.
Imagine all the possibilities for your next painting project. Now imagine saving up to 25% too. From October 2nd through the 6th, save at your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams paint store. Save up to 25% on exceptional Sherwin-Williams paint, stains, wall coverings, and more. But don't wait. Hurry in and save. Only at Sherwin-Williams. For painting, decorating, and great savings. At Sherwin-Williams. For a store near you, visit SherwinWilliams.com. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
Republican Bruce Fine joins me this hour to talk about the Constitution on the PBC show. Fine joins me this hour on the Peter B. Collins Show. We've talked many times over the past year and a half. We actually checked this about our 10th conversation, and I'm glad to meet you finally in person, Bruce Fine. Welcome.
Well, thank you for that kind introduction.
And you're here at our secret studio. Don't tell anybody, or we'll have to take action and reserve a suite for you at Gitmo.
Yeah. Yes, I hope you'll provide me a lawyer, however, unlike the other detainees.
Bruce, in a moment I'm going to read a passage from your book that shows how different our politics are, but I have grown to appreciate and respect you for your principled stands for the Constitution that I share concerns of with you, concerns about, and I really appreciate that you have bucked partisan politics and spoken up about these issues, what kind of repercussions does it create for you? Has it cost you social friendships or political connections? Have you been rejected by people?
You never know what doesn't show up on your doorstep or what invitation is not issued. I do not remember being ostracized in any particular circles, because I think those who disagree with me know, for instance, that I was in the forefront of drafting the articles of impeachment against Bill Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
I believe the Constitution needs to be applied even-handedly. My ideas of interpretation apply whether they help a Democrat or Republican. I have 40 years, not 40 days, to demonstrate my consistency. It is true I get more invitations by Democrats to testify before committees than Republicans, but it may be reversed if Obama is elected as opposed to McCain. So I don't want to in any sense suggest I'm a Sir Thomas More, but I would do it anyway. This mm-hmm. is what I've lived for.
Bruce Fein has a powerful new book out, and I recommend it to you. And it's got a warning label on the front as part of the title, and it reads, "Warning, death and serious injury can occur." The book is Constitutional Peril, subtitled The Life and Death Struggle for Our Constitution and Democracy. And just for a matter of identification, you write in the book, "I believe the Supreme Court's abortion decree in Roe v. Wade and invention of a right to homosexual sodomy in Lawrence v. Texas created wretched constitutional law. I do not believe the Constitution confers a right to same-sex marriage. I oppose racial or gender preferences as offensive to the Equal Protection Clause. However, I celebrated the colorblind civil rights movement of the 50s and 60s. My high school valedictorian speech featured courageous Michigan housewife Viola Liuzzo, who had traveled to Alabama to register blacks to vote and was murdered by the Klan." So you write, "In sum, I am not a liberal craving an opportunity to attack a Republican president or the Republican Party. Indeed, all of my convictions and precepts are pure conservatism as understood by the founding fathers." Now, let's use the Clinton impeachment as a model here. You also go into great depth about my favorite impeachment episode, the Nixon impeachment, but that predates some of our listeners. Now, I'm one of those people, despite having supported Clinton, at least at the ballot box, I departed with him from him on many issues. I believe that he lied under oath. I believe that he delivered the cause of his own impeachment. I believe that while it was a partisan effort that was the culmination of the Arkansas Project that was funded by Richard Mellon Scaife and designed to get rid of Clinton in any possible way, that on the fundamental basics, this was an appropriate impeachment. And ultimately, I believe the Senate made the right decision not to remove Clinton from office for the offenses that I do believe he was guilty of. Your thoughts?
I would amplify on the reasons that you've articulated that justified the impeachment in my mind, and I helped craft the articles. It wasn't even the initial lying under oath, and the audience needs to remember the directive that President Clinton received to answer a question was from a federal judge, not from a Republican or Democrat partisan hack. A federal judge who, in fact, in earlier rulings had favored President Clinton in the Paula Jones litigation. And the president had the right, if he wished, to say, "You're asking a question that would encroach on my privacy and upset my family. I'm not going to answer. I can take a default judgment," and of course his contributors could pay the default judgment, or he could have an adverse finding of fact against him. So he wasn't confronted with this dilemma of either lying and concealing his family or telling the truth and then creating great embarrassment. Moreover, even after he lied, I would not have thought this is an impeachable offense if he went to the public and say, "I was in deep distress. I didn't want to embarrass my family. I lied, and that was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And I apologize for it, but presidents don't have any more right than an ordinary citizen to lie under oath when a judge directs them." But he didn't do that. He said, "Well, this is a right-wing conspiracy, and it really isn't about the rule of law." And then he did it again when the grand jury asked him the same questions, and he did things like George Bush does now, the meaning of the word "is," the meaning of the word "alone," things that were clearly calculated to scorn the rule of law rather than being as president.
He tried to claim that she had sex with him, but he didn't have sex with her.
Yes.
And that's an immaculate conception kind of thing.
George Bush would appreciate that from the New Testament.
Mm-hmm.
And it is I don't want, however, to suggest, as I think you indicate, Peter, that the high crime and misdemeanor was on the scale of Nixon's, which were far more menacing, because mm-hmm. this wasn't a systematic assault on the institutions of power that would permanently set our freedoms at risk. But nonetheless, have a president boast that I can lie under oath when a federal judge in litigation says I have to answer? That seemed to me intolerable where we want to celebrate the rule of law. Because there's one spirit that earmarked the United States from the outset that's so precious. It was that no man or woman is a king or queen. I mean, every man or woman is a king and queen, but no one wears a crown. Mm-hmm. There's no separation between the rulers and the ruled in the eyes of the law. And we are not vassals, and those who serve in public office, even the White House, are not lords. And that really is under assault if a president can say, I don't have to play by the rules that everyone else does.
Mm-hmm. So what has evaporated here? Why under this administration, with a record level of secrecy, of apparent lawbreaking, violation of the Constitution, abrogation of the Geneva Conventions and other treaties, these are very serious offenses. And I, along with you and many others, are troubled by the way Speaker Pelosi, quote-unquote, took impeachment off the table. Now, first address whether impeachment is an option. Is it simply up to those who are in the leadership at the time to determine whether they think the offenses were grave enough? And is it fair to her, for her to make a political calculation that Democrats will benefit more from this presidency cratering in front of our eyes and, you know, presumably more Democrats will be elected in November? Are any of those reasons valid for, quote unquote, taking it off the table?
Well, no. The Constitution endows a majority of the House with the power to impeach a president, irrespective of what the leadership may say. Secondly, the Speaker of the House had no right to take impeachment off the table. It's in Article 2, Section 4, any more than she would have the right to take the First Amendment and freedom of speech or freedom of press off the table. And indeed, she emboldened Cheney and Bush to do even worse things after that, including the instructions to former members of the White House, Harriet Myers and Karl Rove, not even to appear before Congress. This was the first time in the history of the nation that a president has said, not only do you not have to answer questions, you don't even have to show up and tell them what your name is. This is because Nancy Pelosi had given them a green light to do whatever they wanted. And then we had situations where the vice president then began to claim the same privileges of the president. The vice president claimed when Joseph Wilson and Valerie Plame sued for alleged violations of the constitutional right for Cheney's alleged complicity with Scooter Libby and others in leaking that Valerie Plame was a CIA operative, he claimed, I have absolute immunity under the Constitution, like the president, even though at one time he was part of the legislative branch.
Right. And at one point it seemed that he thought he was his own branch
yes.
of government.
Yes, that's right, a fourth branch.
Mm-hmm.
And then he made an even more alarming assertion not long ago when Chairman Henry Waxman, who chairs the Oversight Committee in the House of Representatives, asked for the conversations that Cheney had had with the special prosecutor in the investigation of the Valerie Plame leak. And again, Cheney said, I'm like the president. I have a privilege to keep that secret. Now, those steps, in my judgment, might not have been taken if Pelosi hadn't said, we are actually going to be scrutinizing
Amen.
This administration, and we will impeach you for impeachable offenses. Now, why has this transpired? Why has Pelosi demonstrated this effeteness? In most regards, it's because she herself is compromised. She has conceded early on after 9/11. She was told of the torture, the waterboarding. She was told of the illegal surveillances and did nothing. Indeed, her rather lame explanation is, they told me to keep it secret. Well, she's a member of the House of Representatives who takes an oath to support the Constitution of the United States. It's an irrevocable oath. You can't get around it. That's a condition of accepting a position in the House of Representatives. So that's not an excuse. Mm-hmm. If someone told her a crime, she's supposed to report it, especially an impeachable offense. And surely, when she says my calculation of desisting from impeachment is based upon the idea that we will then capture the presidency, it's good for the Democratic Party. So, Ms. Pelosi, where in the Constitution does it say anything about an oath to the Democratic Party? Nowhere. You have one oath, and one oath only. It's to the Constitution of the United States. If you don't want to comply with it, then you should leave.
And I've made the case that adhering to the Constitution and following the process would accrue to the Democrats' benefit.
Yeah, of course it would.
I
want to add to something that you said, Peter, you know, apparent or possible lawlessness. No, we know this administration has confessed to the crimes. Bush has boasted that for at least 5 years he violated the criminal provision of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act by not obtaining judicial warrants to spy on American citizens on American soil to gather foreign intelligence. He's admitted that.
Yeah.
He doesn't deny it. He's also admitted the waterboarding, which is torture that we prosecuted against the Japanese in as far back as the Spanish-American Wars.
I generally describe it that way, but I'm in the company of a smarter guy with a law degree, so I used alleged and apparent. We're going to take a break and return. Bruce Fein, our guest this entire hour. Your calls and comments, welcome. 888-5 Peter B. Pick up his new book, Constitutional Peril. More in a moment here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
The Carmel Valley Market is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Carmel Valley residents can now easily access the tradition of service and quality made famous by the Higuera family at the Grove Market in Pacific Grove. The Carmel Valley Market features the finest selection of fresh local fruits and veggies, as well as a full-service old-fashioned meat counter with USDA choice cuts. And don't forget the deli with delicious fresh sandwiches made to order. The Carmel Valley Market is located at 2 Chambers Lane, just behind Wells Fargo in Carmel Valley Village. Let the Carmel Valley Market's professional staff meet all of your grocery needs. Stop by and say hello to Ian and Gary Higuera, members of Charlie's family. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 1584 Del Monte is locally owned and operated by the May family and features delicious, authentic, inexpensive Mandarin and Cantonese food prepared to order every day. The May family invites you to savor authentic Chinese dishes like congee and juke at Jim's Restaurant, 1584 Del Monte in Seaside. Jim's specials are still $5.75 for lunch and $6.75 for dinner per person. Stop by 1584 Del Monte or call 394-5117. Don't forget Jim's is tops for takeout and catering too. Call Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 394-5117.
Hello, I'm Solazar.
Hi, I'm Kirilani.
Join us Saturday
from 7 to 9 p.m.
for Good Vibrations Tools for Transformation.
Together, we'll transform your relationships,
communication,
health,
and the ability to reach your goals and dreams.
Good Vibrations.
Saturday, 7 to 9 p.m.
on AM 540 KRXA.
Good afternoon. This is Hal Ginsberg with your KRXA 540 traffic report in the 4 o'clock hour, Friday, October 3rd. Starting in Santa Cruz, we've got a collision on Highway 1 southbound at State Park Drive. Three vehicles apparently are stopped in the right-hand lane. No other details available. Hollister Gilroy is not looking good right now. County Road 8 at Little Uvis Road, we've got a collision there. White Honda Civic's actually overturned. On Santa Ana Road, just west of Prater Way, there's an animal on the road. We've got a collision on Highway 101 southbound at the Gilroy Inspection Facility. And there are no injuries, but we've got a number of cars all in the center divide area. Be very careful there. And finally, rounding out the Hollister-Gilroy problems on Highway 101 northbound this time, just south of State Road 25, we've got a fire, grass fire reported on the right side. Moving to Monterey on Highway 1 at Nacimiento-Ferguson Road, we've got a fire report there as well. Enjoy the Peter B. Collins Show coming right up on KRXA 540.
Hey, babe. Make a date with the Watergate. My fellow Americans, I said, hey, honey, make a date with the Watergate. And Martha Mitchell says, do, 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 do.
Well, she had a drink first. And then she called Helen Thomas. We could sure use a Martha Mitchell these days. Bruce Fine is with me this hour on the Peter B. Collins Show. His new book is called Constitutional Peril, The Life and Death Struggle for Our Constitution and Democracy. If you want to talk with him, grab a line toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B. I really enjoyed the Watergate section of your book, Bruce, because as I told you during the break, it was a formative period for me. I rode to the top of the ratings on Nixon's problems. And you were a young law clerk just out of law school clerking for Robert Bork, the guy who was third in line and ultimately did the deed of the Saturday Night Massacre and fired Archibald Cox.
Yes, but this it's oftentimes not understood what explains his staying. He clearly did not and said, I will not be a Nixon apparatchik. He was close to Richardson and Ruckelshaus. He, under the department's regulations, if he resigned, it would have been acephalous, and the whole special prosecutor's office would have gone defunct.
Acephalous? We don't know that word.
Headless.
Okay, sorry.
And Richardson and then Ruckelshaus urged him to stay so he could maintain the special prosecutor, indeed insist on a replacement, which was Leon Jaworski, who was ultimately the downfall of Richard Nixon.
Mm-hmm.
And I was given a task to early on to draft a monograph, was ended up 100 pages defining what was an impeachable offense. It was a task that hadn't been undertaken for over a century since Andrew Johnson was impeached in 1868 and tried. And I was then going to the Library of Congress in these Dickensian hovels there before you had electronic research and reading the old Boston Globe, and you'd turn a page and little parchment would crumble on you. But it was exciting and very inspiring.
Did it raise conflicts in you? Here you were, a young Republican getting started in Washington, and your president was being subjected to impeachment?
No, because I understood that my oath when I became part of the Department of Justice and then Office of Legal Counsel was to the Constitution of the United States, not to a particular person, unlike, say, one of the Bush appointees who said my oath was to the president, not to the Constitution.
Well, and the OLC, we'll come back to that. That's been a critical linchpin here.
And I, when I was in Office of Legal Counsel, I recall going to the White House and saying, you can't do something. We were not echo chambers of what the White House counsel's office requested. And moreover, during that particular impeachment, there was a Chinese wall that Elliot Richardson had erected between the department as opposed to Nixon's inner circle who defended him. And indeed, there was a debate when the famous Nixon's tapes case got to the Supreme Court, who would be named the United States. Nixon wanted to be him, said no. Department of Justice, Leon Jaworski is the United States, you're Nixon. There was the institution and the country against him. So it was hardly unique to be a Republican and against someone who says, if I do it, it's legal, even if it's burglaries or otherwise. That was truly shocking. And indeed, unlike some other impeachments, the Watergate impeachment was largely bipartisan when you had Republicans like William Cohen. And ultimately, after the so-called smoking gun was revealed, when the Supreme Court forced the disclosure of the tapes, some of the articles of impeachment were unanimously voted. They never ultimately came to the House floor because Nixon resigned before then.
Right, yeah. August 8th, boy.
And remember, it was Mr. Republican Barry Goldwater who ultimately went to the president and said, you will have no votes in the Senate if this goes to a trial, that I think was the deciding moment when Nixon understood he must leave.
Yeah. And was there a single lesson that you drew from that impeachment episode?
Well, there was. And it's one of the things that's so painful to me today, and that is what really drove the Congress and what really drove the president from power was we the people. After the Saturday Night Massacre, which I can still, Peter, remember very vividly right now, that evening, and the CBS interviews on the White House lawn saying, well, this is the burning of the Reichstag for the United States.
Robert Purpoint, you pointed out.
Robert Purpoint, yeah. Yes, mm-hmm. That's who it was. And there were 450,000 telegrams coming in from the American people said, you have to do something here. That's impeachable offense. 450,000 telegrams are more work intensive than emails.
Yeah.
And they were loud. And that is what pushed Congress forward. Before that, it was just burglars who had invaded a Watergate Democratic National Committee complex, and there were a couple who had some friends at the White House.
Bruce Fine is with us. We'll continue in a moment and connect Watergate to the FISA debate of 2008. Read his new book, Constitutional Peril, and join us if you'd like, toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The Barracuda is back. This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. She began with a little small talk.
Nice to meet you. Hey, can I call you Joe?
Of course, it wasn't until near the end that she actually did call him Joe.
Ah, say it ain't so, Joe. There you go again, pointing backwards again, though. You prefaced your whole comment with the Bush administration. Now, doggone it, let's look ahead and tell Americans what we have.
Ronald Reagan meets the Arctic Circle. Poor Joe never had a chance. He focused on his mission, not to come off as the patronizing male, and found himself dodging a barrage of betches and darn rights and bless your hearts and shout-outs. Going in, the question was, would Sarah Palin survive this debate? Coming out, Democrats were secretly saying, thank goodness there's only one. I will say that there still might be a lingering gravitas question. I've never heard nuclear war described in quite this way.
Nuclear weaponry, of course, would be the be-all, end-all of just too many people and too many parts of our planet, so those dangerous regimes, again, cannot be allowed to acquire nuclear weapons.
Darn right you can't have nukes, Mr. Ahmadinejad, bless your insane little heart. But these are just quibbles. The Katie Couric train wreck is history. And so is the concern that Gwen Ifill, author of a book about black politics, would somehow embarrass Sarah Palin, because in a 90-minute debate that talked about bailouts, carbon caps, tax policy, one question was never asked. What makes you ready to step into the job of the most powerful person on Earth? Well, you know, you can't cover everything. Now this.
Imagine this. You walk into your apartment and, oh, boy, you've been robbed. Yep, somebody definitely broke in here and made off with the goods, didn't they? Your flat-screen TV, your laptop, and even your race car-shaped bed's gone. Just a devastating loss. The good news is, if you call GEICO, you could be protected for as little as $12 a month. Yeah, seriously, just $12. So first, call GEICO, and second, maybe think about buying a grown-up bed, yeah?
For a fast, easy rate quote on renter's insurance, visit GEICO.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO.
This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Does it seem like the service is lacking at most service stations? Not at Mid-Valley Valero and Shell on Carmel Valley Road. Mid-Valley, Valero, and Shell offer complete auto repair, smog inspections, major brand tires, 30, 60, and 90,000-mile service checks, complete brake work, and fix any electrical problems. They even provide environmentally friendly auto detailing. Mid-Valley, Valero, and Shell use only the highest quality original and aftermarket auto parts. Call Mid-Valley, Valero, and Shell at 831-624-0722. That's 624-0722. Remember, for all your automobile needs, only Mid-Valley, Valero, and Shell will do. Locally owned, Mid-Valley, Valero, and Shell. Putting the service back in service stations.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, and mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
Hold on here just a second. I'm trying to line up a special tune here for Bruce Fine. Take a listen to this, Bruce.
Here we go, starting another war. We got our heads up our asses. You know, we're really bored. People say we act like clowns. We love natural disasters. Did somebody really drown? We lie whenever we want to. Yeah, you know it's true. And if you don't believe us, turn on the nightly news. Hey, hey, we're Republicans. And people say we act like clowns. We just steal elections.
I don't know who's responsible for that, but it's a ripoff of the old Monkees song. I don't know if that ever penetrated into your iPod, Bruce. He was smiling. Some Republicans get really upset when I play that, but you got a sense of humor. Bruce Fine's new book is Constitutional Peril, The Life and Death Struggle for Our Constitution and Democracy. As you heard, he worked in the Justice Department during the Nixon era. He was also there in the Reagan era and served at the Federal Communications Commission as counsel. And as he told you, too, he was one of the drivers, along with former Congressman Bob Barr, who is now the Libertarian candidate for president, of the Clinton impeachment in the late 1990s. Bruce, in the preceding segment, we talked about Watergate. That produced the need for the FISA law, because Nixon falsely claimed, he tried to play the CIA off against the FBI by claiming they should drop the investigation due to national security concerns. And that produced commissions that led to the enactment of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. And I believe that that's one of the loosest laws that's ever been written. And for Bush to find it confining when he wanted to spy on Americans is just bizarre to me. And one point I want to make about the way you described it in your book, you, like many others, described it as a reaction to 9/11. But we know from Quest Communications in Denver that they received the first request for telephone and email intercepts in late February of 2001, the very early days of the Bush administration, and that those requests were not for international calls or any kind of overseas communications, but they wanted access to a switch that handled local telephone traffic.
A couple of observations. FISA wasn't directly out of Watergate. It is true that Nixon sought to claim that CIA assets in Mexico would be revealed if you trace the money, which was false, but the CIA ultimately resisted, one of their few moments of courage, if you will. The FISA actually stemmed from the abuses that were disclosed first by Seymour Hersh, disclosing what's called the family jewels, an internal CIA investigation of all the illegalities that showed, amongst other things, they were spying on Americans illegally in the 1960s, trying to pin their protest of the Vietnam War to being recipients of foreign communist money. Clearly an illegal effort because the CIA has no domestic law enforcement authority. And it did emerge really under President Ford. It started to be drafted. It ultimately was passed in 1978. But you're correct that the law is very, very relaxed in the standard needed to obtain a warrant. Indeed, during its life, there have been about 20,000-plus warrants and about six denied. Mm-hmm. Moreover, until 9/11, no president ever said that the FISA law crippled their ability or hampered their ability to gather foreign intelligence. No president, and even Bush, when he was elected, didn't say we need to amend the FISA law.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with regard to the Quest statement, one of the problems we have in assessing the correctness is that Congress has been so spineless, they won't ask the question.
Right.
So we're just speculating here. It may well be that the FISA violations began before 9/11, but that's why we have congressional power of investigation.
And well, the president, it's one of the reasons I opposed the FISA amendments and the Protect America Act, because by granting immunity to the phone companies, we shall never know.
Well, that's not strictly speaking true, Peter. It just means that the courts won't tell us through litigation. Congress could get that information tomorrow. And one of the things that I think the focus on the telecommunications did that was a disservice, it distracted attention from the real culprit and the real danger, which is 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
These phone companies didn't do that spontaneously. And the person who should be investigated for being the prime mover in the crime is President Bush. And Congress has the authority to do that. One of the articles of impeachment voted against Richard Nixon by the House Judiciary Committee was he refused to comply with the request for information and subpoenas.
Mm-hmm.
They made it clear, we can't do our task. You have made the impeachment power and other powers empty and toothless if you won't give us information. That's what self-government is about. If you don't know what your government is doing, how do you know whether to support or oppose it? So that's why I go back. That's why Congress is inexcusably derelict in having, years after that's been leaked to the New York Times or to other newspapers by Quest, still not insisting that they have answers. Now, if it's very sensitive, you can get answers in executive session.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean that you have to parade it everywhere where it could give a clue to the enemy to evade. They don't ask the questions at all.
Yeah. I want to go to some phone calls, but two quick points. One is you made a statement to me off the air, and you know that I'm pretty interested in this and pretty well-versed, and I take this as no insult, but you said that things are 10 times worse than I think.
Yes. The reason why I made that statement, Peter, is that, and I won't name particular names, I'm up in the various halls of Congress 2-3 times a week. And the members there, when I speak to them, they know the abuses. They know they've been reduced to an ink blot, and yet they're cynical enough, it doesn't matter. Who cares? We're not going to lose votes. We don't want the responsibility. It doesn't create a soundbite against us. So we have, with that attitude, well, then how can you change things, even with information and knowledge, if they are indifferent to separation of powers and checks and balances? Unless the American people tell their candidates for Congress, unless you tell us you will impeach and you will enforce the law, we won't vote for you, nothing's going to change.
The other most important, there are many important elements of your book, but one that you explore in some depth is the state secret privilege.
Yeah.
I'm one of those people who wants to hear Sybil Edmonds testify. She's been gagged by this murky court precedent. It's not a law. It is a precedent that has been vastly expanded and, I believe, abused by the Bush administration. Talk about that for a moment.
Well, I have testified on state secrets privilege reform before the House Judiciary Committee, and there's a bill that may pass next year, because you're correct, Peter, in that the state secrets privilege is not of constitutional dimension. The U.S. Supreme Court developed it as an evidentiary rule in civil litigation to try to prevent needless exposures of national secrets. And the general rule now is if you sue the government and allege they violated your rights through constitutional wrongdoing, the government says, oh, if we were to defend ourselves, we would have to expose state secrets, then your case gets dismissed. And to show you how absurd the secrets privilege is, think of the case of Mr. Al-Masri, where he brought suit claiming that his rights under the Fifth Amendment and the Eighth Amendment were violated when he was snatched, abducted in Macedonia by CIA operatives, taken to Afghanistan, Bagram prison, abused there, and dumped back into Macedonia. So he sues George Tenet, who was then director of the CIA, and various other CIA officials, saying, you violated my constitutional rights. I need to be compensated. The defense was, well, we can't answer, we can't tell you who you are, who we are, because if you knew who we are, we've exposed an intelligent source. And therefore, if an intelligent source commits the assassination, you can't sue. I mean, this is really catch-22. It says you get a benefit for your lawlessness if you're a CIA operative.
Well, it's an insult to our intelligence and a major abrogation of our Constitution, in my opinion.
Yes, because it makes your rights very toothless if someone can violate them and then claim a privilege not to be sued about.
Switchboard's jammed. We start with Patrick in Monterey, listening on KRXA. Go, Patrick.
Greetings from Maybrussel country, Peter B.
Howdy.
It's a pleasure to speak to both of you. As an aside, Mr. Fine, your book is actually on hold for me for the last 3 days. I'm picking it up today at a local bookstore. And, Peter, I have a request for you before I present my questions. Is it possible, since I don't have an iPod and I'm not in a position to make, you know, new consumer products, sorry, retail outlets,
okay,
to get a tape copy, because I only got in the time to start recording the second half. I'd really like a copy of this to share with Republican family and friends.
Can you do the podcast off the web?
Because
it's hard for me to supply copies of the show to individuals. It just gets too messy. But every show is available in recorded form, archived audio, or a podcast, and the link is on my homepage at peterbcollins.com.
I just wanted to find a way to transfer it to cassette to give it to people. Anyway,
I don't have a cassette deck anymore. It's a boat anchor now.
Go ahead, Patrick. I have three questions real quick. I'll try and get them out quick and get off the air. The first one is, in November of 2001, I think a media consortium released the results of the recount of the 2000 election, which showed that any possible combination, undervote, overvote, hanging Chad, dimple Chad, Gore won every possible combination. Did we have constitutional recourse to remove Bush and place Gore in the White House? That's my first question.
All right, let's take them one at a time. Bush v. Gore.
Well, certainly there's the authority of the House, and if you don't take impeachment off the table, if you suggest that there was wrongdoing in the counting of the ballots, you could certainly remove the president. Now, that would then have the vice president involved as a successor, and if you remove the vice president, then the Speaker of the House. I think in 2001, the House was still in control of the Republicans. I don't recall who the Speaker was at the time. But there wouldn't be a way under the Constitution to force Al Gore into the White House under those circumstances.
Okay, next question, Patrick, and let's limit it to one because I got a lot of callers. Go ahead.
Okay, the other question was, are you going to be are you going to be chiming in on any evidence of voter suppression or vote theft if it seems that there's a lot of evidence that the McCain campaign ends up stealing the election? And my third question is, do we have legal recourse as voters to have McCain's medical records released to the public so we know who we're putting in office if we elect him?
All right. Thank you, Patrick. Go ahead, Bruce.
I certainly would be in the front lines of ensuring that any election is untainted by fraud or illegality. Obviously, elections are a touchstone of the fairness and legitimacy of any system, and the right to vote is the most precious right we have. It's preservative of all other rights. With regard to the medical records, that's something that there is no law that requires him to release that information. It's fair for a voter to consider that he's probably trying to conceal something adverse. Otherwise, why wouldn't he disclose it? Congress might make a law, I think, that would be constitutional, requiring all candidates for the presidency to make such disclosures, and the idea that it means a more informed republic, but they haven't done so yet.
We go to Julie in Eureka, listening to KGOE. Go ahead, Julie.
Oh, hi. It's an honor to speak to an honorable Republican. I've watched you on CC many times and always feel like there's hope. I was wondering if you could tell me if the argument that conservatives make that they want to get rid of judicial activists and put on their own kind of judges on in different courts and the Supreme Court, if that's a spurious argument on its face, because either way, you know, when they make decisions that it could be considered judicial activism. And I'd like to know if you would have, if you'd been in the Senate, if you would have voted for Alito and Roberts.
The first question is, certainly if you take the statements made by John McCain, and I think many Republicans, they really are duplicitous in arguing against judicial activism. John McCain, virtually in the same paragraph, said on the one hand, the judges that he appoints should not try to second-guess the legislators and popular opinion about policies, and therefore you should have to struggle in convincing others to have your way. And then, before the paragraph ends, he says, but when it comes to gun control, No gun control ever. We want judges to tell legislators and the American people you can have no gun control. And when it comes to taking private property for economic development, no, we want the courts to say you can never take private property for that purpose, no matter how many laws wish it, and no matter how many people in the public want that particular objective. So there, it's just I want activism when it's doing what I want it to do, but not otherwise. Now, my view of nominations of judges is different than Joe Biden's. I've examined for a long portion of my life what the Founding Fathers intended the confirmation process to be about. And it was to be a vetting of a nominee for competence, cronyism, or corruption. And the reason was that the president, for good or for ill, has a national perspective, and he runs in part his campaign on who will reappoint to the Supreme Court. Senate does not. You very seldom, if ever, have a Senate campaign over who they'll support or oppose. Mm-hmm. And therefore, if you have someone who satisfies that criteria of competence, not being a crony, not being corrupt, I think the Senate should fully expose the views so the members of the public know whether to support or oppose the president in the future if they don't like the appointment. But otherwise, there should be confirmation. I would have voted in support of Sam Alito and John Roberts. Both of those, by the way, are my friends. But I also believe that, with regard to Clinton, that his appointments of Justice Breyer and Justice Ginsburg were properly confirmed as well, even though I wouldn't be an echo of their views.
We're going to take a break and return with Bruce Fein. Pick up his new book, Constitutional Peril, or put it on hold at your local bookstore. We'll continue in just a moment on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Good afternoon. This is Hal Ginsberg with your KRXA 540 traffic report. Let's start in Santa Cruz and work our way down. The problem we've been reporting on Highway 1 southbound at State Park Drive is largely cleared up. There is a tow truck that may still be pulling a vehicle away, but largely clear on Highway 1 at this time. Moving east to Hollister Gilroy, Uvis Road, just south of Croy Road, we've got a collision there. Vehicle has overturned. Moving south to Monterey County, State Road 68, Highway 68 at Corral de Tierra Road. We've got a collision. No injuries there, but slow going. And finally, all the way south below Big Sur on Highway 1 at Nacimiento, Ferguson Road. Highway 1 is being closed periodically due to a grass fire. We'll be right back with Peter B. Collins only on KRXA 540.
Go ahead, take a deep breath. Yep, there's nothing like that new car insurance smell.
I love it.
Want to take it for a test drive?
Sure.
Wouldn't it be great if you could test drive car insurance? Well, maybe you can.
Notice all the impressive standard features. Good neighbor service for extra comfort and stability. And look how great it handles around those hairpin turns in your budget.
Check out the company 40 million other drivers trust, State Farm. No one gives more discounts to more drivers, and nobody takes care of you like a State Farm agent.
Who's that?
That's your built-in security system. Your very own State Farm agent.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Hey there, and who are those guys?
Oh, that's your award-winning claims department.
Wow.
So talk to a State Farm agent today and kick the tires on our car insurance. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
I'm Justin Hamble, your Monterey Bay State Farm agent. Call me today at 831-688-3683. That's
688-3683.
Come here, Max. What's wrong? What?
Ruff.
Oh, I get it. A rough day?
Ruff, ruff.
Hi, I'm Dr. Annetta Richmond inviting you to Natural Veterinary Therapy in Pacific Grove, the peninsula's new holistic veterinary medicine clinic featuring a wide variety of natural treatments and remedies for common ailments. We also specialize in acupuncture, chiropractic, and physical rehabilitation using an underwater treadmill. Natural Veterinary Therapy, Lighthouse Avenue between 14th and 15th in Pacific Grove. Our environment is unique. Clients comment on how calm and caring it is for their pets and themselves. At Natural Veterinary Therapy, our goal is to help your pet heal from within. So think for yourself and think for your pets. Visit our website at naturalveterinarytherapy.com or call 655-0501. That's 655-0501.
Meow. Whiskers, I'd better call Dr. Richmond for you, too.
Meow, meow.
It's time for more here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Want to dip into the PBC tax-deductible music archives one more time. A special tune for Bruce Fine here. Do you like country music with electric guitars?
Any music's good for me.
Impeachment with honor. Take a step toward nirvana. Make your cell phone calls fast. They be watching your ass. Impeachment with honor. But say our forefathers, if they were around, this White House would crash on down.
We'll take one more verse here from
a disgraceful Bush administration. Cheney seems to want world domination. Yeah, the president's fake. Halliburton's on the take. Folks are wondering who's running our nation.
The song's called Impeachment with Honor. It's Joe Grease and the Dump W Band. And I got you a commemorative copy for your own collection, Bruce.
Thank you.
And before we take another call, the last caller was asking about Alito and Roberts. And I understand your principles there about confirmation. What about the unitary executive privilege that they both articulated? Do you support that interpretation?
No, and I don't think it's fair if you read some of the decisions to say that either justice subscribes to those. Just, for instance, there was the Bush administration who claimed that president could unilaterally tell the Texas courts how to handle a death penalty case involving aliens who had not been properly told that they could talk to their consulate. And President Bush said, I unilaterally can tell Texas courts what to do. And Alito and Roberts said, no, you can't. Congress hasn't done anything. But to go to the more substantive argument about a unitary executive, it has two meanings. One is a valid one, and one is the one that Bush subscribes to is clearly invalid and totally preposterous. The Founding Fathers had substantial debates about whether there should be a single president or the executive should be collective, like under the Articles of Confederation, you had 13. And they said, we want a single president because that's how you can fasten responsibility. Their history showed when you had collective executives, everyone pointed fingers at everybody else. No one wanted to do anything unless they would get credit for it. And so you had a very paralyzed president. Now, that did not mean, however, that they intended once there was a power that was executive, that it could only be exercised by the president. For instance, treaty making requires the Senate to vote two-thirds to approve any treaty negotiated by the president. So the Founding Fathers said there is one executive, but the executive power shall be checked by the other branches, not so that they can exercise what's called a controlling or dispositive influence, but a checking influence, just like the powers of the legislature are shared with the president. The president can veto a bill. And judicial powers are also shared. The fact is that the Congress decides electoral disputes involving their own members, not the judiciary. So this idea that once you say a power is executive, like the power to enforce the laws, then he can decide not to enforce them with impunity, or that he's the commander-in-chief, that means Congress can't regulate whether he commits torture, whether he breaks and enters, whether he uses military commissions or anything else in order to win the war. These are preposterous, counter-constitutional theories that have never been subscribed to by the United States Supreme Court, which explains why the court, on the occasions when it has examined Bush's post-9/11 theories, has rebuked him on virtually every occasion.
Respond to four words. Signing statements, David Addington.
Signing statements are those that can have a legitimate purpose or an illegitimate purpose. And David Addington wasn't the sole originator, although he's the one who's pushed the White House to attach signing statements to such bills as those prohibiting inhumane, cruel, or degrading treatment. And the statements basically say, if I think it's necessary to gather foreign intelligence, the heck with the law. Clearly an unconstitutional assertion of prerogative. Signing statements originated when the president was involved in legislation. And like Congress would have its view of ambiguous terms, the president being involved in the negotiations, they, well, I interpret this provision in a particular way. There's nothing unusual about that. But Bush has really changed it, although it originated in some prior presidents as well, including Clinton, to say, no, even when the law is clear, Mm-hmm. And it has nothing to do with my knowledge of what it means. If I think it's unconstitutional, I simply won't enforce it. I won't tell Congress I'm going to what my policies are on national security letters. I'm not going to comply with the law saying I can't use the military in Colombia to go after the narco traffickers, things like that. And one of the most dangerous ones is he recently attached a signing statement to the National Defense Authorization Act of 2008, which had two provisions, one saying no monies can be used to have permanent military bases in Iraq, two, no money can be used permanently to obtain control over all the oil resources in Iraq. No ambiguity at all. And he said, sorry, I think that curtails my power as commander-in-chief.
Let's go to Joe in Brookings, Oregon. You're on with Bruce Fine. Joe, go ahead.
What does Mr. Fine think about Vincent Bugliosi's book and his theory about having Bush and Cheney prosecuted for war crimes for murder?
It's actually, for murder.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, he's spoken to me about it, and he's testified on some hearings that I've been at, and I've told him, I said, Victor, when you're questioning the actions of the president or vice president in their capacity as federal officers, only the federal government has the jurisdiction to prosecute. States cannot. This goes back to old famous case concerning California, where there was a bodyguard who was protecting then Justice Stephen J. Field, and he killed someone who tried to attack Stephen J. Field, Justice Field, and the California state authorities wanted to prosecute him for murder, and the Supreme Court said no. Only the feds have jurisdiction here, and I think that you've got to stick with the Constitution, which says it's got to be the successors of Bush and Cheney in the White House who do this. We do know that Barack Obama has said, I don't see any criminality, and there's no stomach in the Democrats to push after the new election into anything that would cause, in their mind, some kind of controversy on the public.
Joe, thanks for the question. Bruce Fine, thanks for standing up for the Constitution.
Thank you.
It's very important, and I appreciate the work you're doing. The book is Constitutional Peril, The Life and Death Struggle for Our Constitution and Democracy. Bruce Fine, F-E-I-N, has been our guest this hour. Share a podcast with a friend. The link is on my homepage at peterbcollins.com.
How would you like to get fit, stay fit, and help others do the same? You can earn extra money even on a part-time basis in the health and fitness world. Control your own destiny. My name is Dennis, and as an online fitness coach like me, you can begin creating a life for yourself and your family with better health, more energy, and more financial freedom. We'll show you just how easy it is to join one of the fastest growing companies in America. We'll train you and even give you your customers. It's all done part-time, online, and when you have the time. Harness the power of the Internet and earn the income you deserve. For more details, call 702-299-5789. That's 702-299-5789. There's no obligation. You have everything to gain and nothing to lose. 702-299-5789 or visit us online at fitandgetrich.com. That's fitandgetrich.com.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. There was plenty of suspense, but in the end, a revised credit market rescue plan won final congressional approval today. CBS News correspondent Tom Foti reports.
4 days after the House first said no, 2 days after the Senate said yes by a 3-1 margin, there was still House opposition like that of Ohio Democrat Marcy Kaptur.
The Treasury plan throws an ungodly amount at Wall Street.
But Republican leader John Boehner argued,
the American people sent us here to do our jobs on their behalf. They're counting on us.
And enough Republicans did switch to easily pass the rescue or bailout measure this time, the vote 263 to 171. Tom Foti, CBS News, Washington.
President Bush wasted no time signing the measure into law.
This morning, we learned that America lost jobs again in September. Disappointing news that underscores the urgency of the bill that Congress passed today.
Mr. Bush was in St. Louis this evening at a $1.5 million fundraiser for Republican Congressman Kenny Holschoff, who's running for governor of Missouri. Earlier today, Holschoff voted against the bailout bill. When the House rejected the first plan, the stock market tanked. You might have expected the opposite reaction today, but the Dow fell 157 points to finish the week at 10,325. CBS News business reporter Alexis Christophorus explains.
No doubt Wall Street knows this bailout plan was badly needed, and there was a sigh of relief on the floor. In fact, traders cheered once news hit that the House had passed the bailout plan. But once that happened and the market had sort of jumped over that hurdle, the market was looking ahead to the next thing. And the next thing is this economic crisis is actually getting worse, and we saw that in the jobs report.
The Labor Department says the economy lost 159,000 jobs in September, the ninth straight month of declines. Both presidential candidates welcomed today's House action, but said there's more to be done.
If we can stop the bleeding with this package, implement it effectively, and then move forward to deal with the broader problems on Main Street, then hopefully we can start getting our economy back on track.
This rescue bill isn't perfect, and it's an outrage that it's even necessary. But we have to stop the damage to our economy done by corrupt and incompetent practices on Wall Street and in Washington.
John McCain's calling for tighter regulation. Tight credit has made it difficult, if not impossible, for businesses, individuals, and even state and local governments to borrow money. CBS News correspondent Ben Tracy reports California has a $7 billion cash flow crisis.
The state treasurer is saying that if after October 28th the state hasn't gotten a loan either from the government or from somewhere else, that they're going to have to start cutting services. And that's everything from schools to hospitals to nursing homes to infrastructure to law enforcement.
Treasurer Bill Lockyer has even reached out to Microsoft founder Bill Gates. The price of oil slipped a few pennies today to $93.88 a barrel. This is CBS News.
Get the good stuff! Now for a limited time, you can get Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil for just $5.99 a quart at participating Napa Auto Parts stores. Designed to deliver unbeatable protection, Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil keeps your engine running strong. And experts will tell you that getting regular oil changes will also go a long way toward improving your fuel economy. So pick up some Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil today and turn the trip into Napa into a few less trips to the gas pump. Napa, get the good stuff.
Get the good stuff!
Imagine all the possibilities for your next painting project. Now imagine saving up to 25% too. From October 2nd through the 6th, save at your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams paint store. Save up to 25% on exceptional Sherwin-Williams paint, stain, wall coverings, and more. But don't wait. Hurry in and save. Only at Sherwin-Williams. For painting, decorating, and great savings.
At Sherwin-Williams.
For a store near you, visit SherwinWilliams.com. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
How do you feel about your boss? Many of us apparently do not hold our employers in high esteem. CBS's Sam Litzinger reports.
Is your boss as bad as Mr. Burns from The Simpsons?
Family, religion, friendship. These are the three demons you must slay if you wish to succeed in business.
A survey by Randstad USA finds nearly half of all American workers don't respect their boss, and only about half of them believe their boss is even competent. Researchers say the financial mess has more companies focusing on their bottom lines at the expense of employee relations, so bosses are spending more time on money matters and less time on things like morale.
Excellent.
Or maybe not, Mr. Burns. Sam Litzinger, CBS News.
The sign of the times in China, where the economy's been booming, the plane used by the late dictator Mao Zedong, a British-built Trident jetliner, has been on display at a shopping mall in the southern city of Zhuhai. But now it's for sale. The mall's owner says they need more parking space. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
How to show old man winter the door. Step 1. Pick out a new door for 15% off at the Home Depot. Step 2. Get excited. You're about to put a dent in your energy bill. Step 3. Close your beautiful new door. Hear that tighter seal? So does old man winter.
Get 15% off select special order doors and windows and save even more with lower prices on items throughout the store. The Home Depot. You can do it. We can help. Offer ends October 15th. U.S. only. See store for details.
Prices are up. The cost of running your business is up. Everything's up, except your marketing budget. So what's a small business to do? Email marketing to your current customers with ConstantContact.com. With Constant Contact, you get professional-looking email newsletters that keep your customers coming back. Plus, there's a free 60-day trial with plans as low as $15 a month. So even if the economy's down, your sales don't have to be. Put your marketing on the upswing with ConstantContact.com.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B. And be part of Peter B.'s America.
Welcome to this hour of the Peter B. Collins Show. Just about a month remaining until our historic fall elections, president, a third of the Senate, the entire House of Representatives, many state and local elections. And there are grave concerns about election integrity. The concerns are so grave that this week The Simpsons, it's an episode scheduled for November 2nd, will feature Homer's attempt to vote for Barack Obama. But when he goes into the polls, the machine records the vote for John McCain, and then as Homer, tries to correct it, the electronic voting machine swallows Homer Simpson. Our go-to guy on election protection joins us this hour, per usual, Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. And Brad is high-tech today. He's in a spiffy studio in Los Angeles because right after our hour today, he's going to be plugging in and subbing co-host or substitute hosting the Mike Malloy Show, Coast to Coast. Brad, welcome.
How are you, Peter?
Well, it sounds like you're sitting right across the table from me.
It feels like I'm sitting right across the table from you.
Well,
it's about
good.
Time.
Yeah.
I wish I was sitting right across the table from you. I'm starving.
Oh, well, I've got some chocolates over here.
Okay, send it down. I've got 3 hours of Malloy to follow. I'll need them.
All right. Be glad to share with you. I am disappointed at the moment because we went to great lengths to schedule Wall Street Journal columnist John Fund. He's also a Fox News contributor to join us. And Katrina is trying to track him down right now. We understood that he would be traveling in California today, and we are trying to reach him right now. John Fund has published an updated version of a book that he first issued in 2004 called Stealing Elections, How Voter Fraud Threatens Our Democracy. And, Brad, I've had a little longer than you with the book. I've had it for a few days. And in my view, he takes a series of anecdotes and describes them in a compelling way. But to me, they don't add up to the indictment that he suggests of this broad swath of elections that are being corrupted by voter fraud. And John Fund has joined us right now. John, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
It's nice to talk with you. And I just described your book a little bit, Stealing Elections, How Voter Fraud Threatens Our Democracy. And my co-host for this hour is Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Brad, say hello to John Fund.
Hi, John. How are you, sir?
Pleasure. Thank you.
It's good to talk with you. John, give us a minute or two summation of your book and why you feel that voter fraud is of such serious concern.
Well, the major timely impact of my book is I fear that we are heading for an election meltdown similar to what happened in Florida in 2000, because the same conditions of incompetence, bad voting systems, and lots of litigation could trip us up in this election. This is likely still, although Obama has opened up a lead, I think in the end it's likely to be a close election. If it's a close election, McCain has 5,000 lawyers. Obama has 9,000 lawyers monitoring this election. I think there's a 1 in 3 chance we're going to head towards a Florida-style round of recriminations, recounts, and rogue lawyers filing lawsuits everywhere, some valid, some invalid.
Okay. And what is your view of voter suppression tactics that have been primarily attributed to Republican operatives?
Well, I have a section in the book on Republican strong-arm tactics, and I do discuss that. I think neither party has a monopoly on virtue. I think that voter suppression has been written about a great deal. I think that we have two civil rights at stake in this election. We fought a great civil rights struggle in the 1960s to get rid of poll taxes, literacy tests, all kinds of impediments and barriers to voting. I think we need to preserve and extend those gains. But your listeners have another civil right. They have a civil right not to have their vote canceled out by someone who shouldn't be voting, someone who's voting twice, incompetent bureaucrats who don't count their vote, and people who don't even exist. That's a civil right, too. You can be as disenfranchised from voting if you're blocked from voting as when your vote is canceled out by an invalid vote.
All right, Brad.
John, you talk about rogue lawyers filing lawsuits everywhere. The GOP has been filing lawsuits and making complaints. In fact, we got news today about 6,000 voters who were challenged in Montana, only in the Democratic counties up there, 30 days before an election, based only on the fact that they moved and they filed with the U.S. Postal Service a change of address. The officials up there say they can't believe it. They've never seen this kind of challenge, and it's causing nothing but chaos up there. Do you approve of that sort of tactic by the GOP?
Look, what I disapprove of is the tit-for-tat in which one side only discusses, you know, one aspect of the situation. I have not heard of this before. I'd have to look at it.
John, we don't have...
Can I finish my answer?
Absolutely.
Okay. I certainly will look into it. I certainly have seen, for example, a Republican lawsuit in Ohio regarding some absentee voters who didn't fill out the form properly because they didn't check a box. I think if you don't fill out the form properly, the rule of law dictates that your vote isn't counted. So I would say that Republican lawsuit is highly suspect. I would also tell you, though, I've talked to election officials, including a Democratic county clerk, who cannot believe that the governor of Montana told the American Trial Lawyers Convention in New York that he had manipulated the 2006 Senate election by trying to scare away election monitors on an Indian reservation and by trying to manipulate a county clerk to not reporting results in order that there would be less chance of a recount being held. Now, that speech by the Governor Schweitzer was tape recorded. Now, he says he didn't mean it. It was all a joke. Well, he's either embarrassing election officials whom he named in that speech, or he engaged in election fraud. Either one is not pretty. He's either a gigantic liar or he's a gigantic fraud.
John, you have to take his pick. You said that I agree. I don't think we need this tit for tat. Unfortunately, so far I'm only saying tit.
I criticized two lawsuits. I criticized the Republican lawsuit in Ohio, and yeah. I criticized the Democratic governor's speech before the trial lawyers.
So do you condemn?
You criticize the Democratic lawsuit in exchange now, since you've criticized the Republican lawsuit in Montana?
Do I criticize which?
In other words, what I'm simply saying is I'm tired of people who only address one side of this issue.
Oh, no, I don't address only one side of this issue, sir.
It happens on both sides, and I think if you're going to discuss this issue objectively, you have to provide and criticize examples on both sides.
And, of course, I do. I don't care who it is who's keeping Americans from voting, and I will protect any vote. I'm sorry?
What example of voter fraud concerns you, then?
Of voter fraud?
Yes.
Since the Bush Department's own Justice Department, Bush Administration's own Justice Department, could only find 18 cases of voting by people who are ineligible over the past 5 years by their own numbers, despite the unprecedented amount of money and assaults that they've been putting on voters to try to come up with this phony voter fraud stuff, I'm not so concerned with voter fraud. I'm concerned with the election fraud. John, I allowed you to speak. You asked me to not interrupt you. I didn't.
I'm just asking for an answer to my question.
I'm concerned about the 100,000 phantom votes that showed up in Tarrant County, Texas, in 2006 in a Republican Supreme Court election where the Supreme Court, former Supreme Court justice who was running, saw 100,000 extra votes show up on the voting machines down there, and in Winkler County, where he had previously won by 74% and 65%. He got zero votes in Winkler County. Does that concern you, John Fund?
I still have not gotten an answer to my question, which is my book has examples of voter fraud and voter suppression in both parties. I'm waiting for you to respond with an example where you think Democrats have had a problem and where there's issues that need to be investigated.
And as I told you, I have not seen, and as I told your cohort, John Von Spakovsky,
John, we have your point. Pause for a minute. Go ahead, Brad.
Let me. Your cohort, John Von Spakovsky, wrote about voter fraud that took place. Your cohort, John Von Spakovsky, wrote about voter fraud having taken place in Chicago.
I don't know him.
You don't know. You wrote about him in your book.
I don't know an individual named John von Spakovsky.
I'm sorry, Hans von Spakovsky.
Oh,
my apologies.
If you can't even get the name right, how in the world am I supposed to know who this person is?
Okay, cute games, John, but let me say that Hans von Spakovsky wrote about voter fraud that took place.
He's a source.
John Hans von Skotsky, you're just going to filibuster here, aren't you?
Is this an interview or an interrogation?
Can
you ask me a question, please?
I'm trying to, but you keep talking. He talked about voter fraud that took place in 1982 in Chicago, but as it turned out, it wasn't voter fraud. It was actually election insiders who were voting for other people. Now,
That's voter fraud.
I'm sorry?
That's voter fraud. How do you define voter fraud?
The way you define it, sir. I will tell you the way that you define it. You say photo ID requirements will keep people from committing
voter fraud. Define voter fraud. I'm sorry. Have you read the book?
Okay. Voter fraud would be someone showing up who's a double voter, who's voted twice, and
That's not what I say in my book, and that's not how I define it, sir.
Okay, John. What's voter fraud?
Voter fraud is any occasion upon which someone's vote is diluted, or they're disenfranchised, or the vote is canceled out by manipulation, by conscious effort, or by incompetence that is so rampant on the part of election officials that it represents malpractice.
And your solution is photo ID at the...
I'm being interrupted again. This interview cannot go on if people don't allow me to have an interview, not an interrogation.
Go ahead, John.
Okay. Voter fraud happens many times through absentee ballots that have nothing to do with people showing up at the polls or impersonating anyone.
Right.
Voter fraud with absentee ballots is practiced by both parties. It has a long history, which is one of the reasons why liberals like Norm Ornstein at the American Enterprise Institute, why liberals like Melody Rose at the University of Portland in Oregon, and many other liberals oppose absentee voting expansion because it is an easy and too often used method for stealing votes, for inventing voters who don't exist.
I concur.
And I have a whole chapter in my book on that.
And I concur with you, John.
Both parties.
How does photo ID at the polling place keep that from happening? Because I agree, absentee balloting is a problem, and it should be limited. How does photo ID keep that from occurring, John?
I don't understand. They're two separate issues. Photo ID is for people who show up and vote in person. Absentee ballot protections and a limitation on the expansive use of absentee ballots in areas where you don't have sufficient ballot integrity programs is a separate chapter of my book. You're confusing two chapters of my book.
You supported photo ID in Georgia and in Indiana despite the proponents were unable to show. They were unable to show a single case of... John?
Have you read this book?
No, I just received
it
yesterday.
You're asking questions which are completely nonsensical.
All right, gentlemen, stand by. We're going to take a break and return.
No.
John Fund is with us, a columnist for the Wall Street Journal and a Fox News contributor. His new book is called Stealing Elections, How Voter Fraud Threatens Our Democracy. Brad Friedman with us, too, from bradblog.com. We'll take a break and continue here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
I'm Todd Hornick, and I approve this message.
I'm Amy Carrizosa, a peace officer in Monterey County. On behalf of 19 individual officer associations and the entire law enforcement community, we urge you to elect Todd Hornick, Monterey County Judge. Todd's opponent has never practiced law in Monterey County. While Todd has earned our support through his faithful and diligent efforts on behalf of Monterey County residents every day for the past 14 years, Todd Hornick is clearly the best qualified candidate for Monterey County Judge.
I'm Todd Hornick, and I approve this message.
Hi, this is Cynthia.
And this is Paul at the Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore.
Have you heard about the events at Pilgrim's Way and the Secret Garden? Maybe too late? Our events include workshops, lectures, and book signings by recognizable and well-known authors locally, nationally, and internationally on a wide range of topics.
Don't miss another chance. You can receive Pilgrim's Way event announcements personally by going to pilgrimsway.com and click on Events to subscribe to the private email service listed. An event calendar is also posted on the Pilgrim's Way community bulletin board inside the bookstore for your convenience. Support independence. Come in and pick up a free KRXA bumper sticker. We're on Dolores Street between 5th and 6th in downtown Carmel.
Or give us a call at 624-4955.
Hey, it's Sheila Gale with 2 hours of talk radio all about our daily challenges, our fears, changes, crisis, addictions. Over 1,700 of them, can you believe it? Using the 12 steps, the law of attraction, whatever it takes. Join me Saturday afternoons 3 to 5 with my guests and we'll find solutions together. The Sheila Show, Saturday 3 to 5 on KRXA, brought to you by Benji's Princess Monterey Whale Watching Trips. Open daily on Old Fisherman's Wharf, Monterey.
Dedicated to the proposition that fun, learning, and personal growth go together perfectly, Thinker Toys, with two beautiful stores on the Monterey Peninsula, has an incredible selection of fun and educational toys, games, books, and art supplies for infants to teens. For nearly 40 years, Thinker Toys owner Mark Phillips and his experienced staff have been serving the parents and children of the Central Coast. They can help you choose the perfect gift for the special child in your life. Join Thinker Toys' three generations of satisfied customers, and you'll see why Thinker Toys is the most fun place to shop on the Monterey Peninsula. Open every day. Thinker Toys is at the corner of San Carlos and 7th in Carmel by the Sea, and next to Starbucks in the Del Monte Center in Monterey. You can also order by phone, 831-624-0441. That's 624-0441. Or browse at thinkertoys.com.
And good afternoon. This is Hal Ginsberg with your KRXA 540 traffic report on Friday, October 3rd. Starting in Hollister-Gilroy area, Highway 101 northbound, just south of Y Road, we've got a hazard there. Also in Hollister-Gilroy, still got a problem at Uvis Road, just south of Croy Road. That was that collision, the overturned Honda Civic, still slowing traffic. In Santa Cruz County, we've got a collision on Highway 1. Just north of Soquel Drive. Now, that's southbound, and California Highway Patrol is on scene there. Moving south to Monterey County, Highway 101 southbound on Front Street off-ramp. We've got a gold Nissan Sentra that's stopped on the right side. California Highway Patrol is en route there. And finally, that fire on Highway 1 down below Big Sur at NASA, Miento, Ferguson Road is causing havoc with the roadway closed partially and intermittently. Enjoy the rest of the Peter B. Collins Show right here on AM 540.
Talking with John Fund from the Wall Street Journal, the author of Stealing Elections, How Voter Fraud Threatens Our Democracy. And Brad Friedman is with us from bradblog.com. And, John Fund, next I want to turn the issues here to the photo ID, which was embraced by the Supreme Court in a decision right before the... John Fund? Well, Brad, I think John Fund deserted us during the commercial break.
I wonder why.
Yeah. Well, so much for John Fund.
I'm sure he just lost the signal. Why don't we give him a call back? I'm sure he'll answer.
All right, Katrina, can you try to reconnect with John? We'll see if he intentionally disconnected.
He wouldn't know. I'm sure it wouldn't be intentional, even though, you know, he was confused because I had mentioned, I meant Hans von Spakovsky, and
right.
I said John von Spakovsky, and he it just didn't ring a bell there. I guess he must know quite a few von Spakovskys, but...
Mm-hmm.
He couldn't, but of course, Hans von Spakovsky was the head of the, was part of the civil rights unit, ironically enough, at the DOJ voting section,
right.
And he was the fellow who had instituted, who had approved this Georgia photo ID law, which had the Supreme Court of Georgia not found it unconstitutional, it would have, in fact, disenfranchised thousands, if not millions, of voters. John Fund is in favor of that. He's in favor of that happening in Indiana. He is, frankly, running a scam. And it's as straight as that. I wish he was here. I wish he was here for the whole hour so that we could talk to him, so he could put out his point of view. But, you know, he's put out his point of view. He's on Fox News running the scam. He was recently on Bill Maher. He said the complaints in 2004 in Ohio and Florida about the voting out there
mm-hmm.
were about Democrats committing voter fraud. That's what he said on Bill Maher.
Well, and I've spent some time with his book. I've not read every page of it, but what I picked up from the book is that he has gathered every available anecdote of alleged voter fraud or irregularity, and combined it into a book where, you know, he hopes the weight of this supports his contention that this is a widespread and serious problem.
Did he find the anecdote about Ann Coulter having committed voter fraud, which is more than an anecdote? It's actually proven at bradblog.com/Coulter fraud, because I don't find it in the index of his book here, Peter.
No, Ann Coulter did not make the index of the book. So, again, I haven't read every page, but I don't think that's in there. Well, he is not responding to our efforts to reach him now, so I think it's fair to say that John Fund has signed off from our broadcast today.
John Fund has left the building.
Yeah, yeah. And I do think that, I'm glad that we tried this. I think it's important to try to engage people from the other side of the political spectrum. And Brad, I don't want to turn you into a Democrat, because I know that you're an independent and that your focus at BradBlog is not on party politics or anything partisan, but on the electoral process itself. And I think it's important to note that I see this as part and parcel of the Republican messaging to try to divert attention to the acts of individuals, individual voters, when the true problem is with the way our elections are conducted and that they are so vulnerable to manipulation that we've seen hard evidence of that manipulation over the last few election cycles.
Well, and we're seeing them now, and we're seeing it in a big way. And, of course, I'm going to be talking about it on the Molloy Show, because it's the voting, stupid. That's what the Democrats need to understand. And to me, you mentioned somebody on the other political side. This is not a political issue to me. I know it's elections. It should be. People think of it as political. But the right to vote, I mean, it's no more political than the U.S. Constitution. And, you know, the right to vote where it is granted, it's not a left and right, red, blue, Republican, Democrat thing. You either get to vote or you don't. And guys like John Fund and his cohort Hans von Spakovsky and Thor Hearn and all of these players around the country are doing everything they can to keep people from voting. I find that appalling. And if they're going to keep Republicans from voting, guess what? I'm just as ticked off about that. This one fellow's about to ship off to Iraq, just put out a statement today, I think it was on Huffington Post. He's in New Jersey. His vote has been challenged in Montana with 6,000 other voters who have been challenged, and he can't get back there to verify his identity. Why was he challenged? Because he moved this year.
Mm-hmm.
This is appalling, and I don't know if that guy's a Republican or a Democrat, but the fact that he's going to be disenfranchised really ticks me off, and I will fight no end for him. I don't give a damn what his partisan affiliation is.
We're going to take a break and return with Brad Friedman. You want to talk about our interrupted conversation with John Fund or other issues? Give us a call. Toll free, it's 888-5-PETER-B.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Cornucopia Landscaping in Santa Cruz is a complete design, installation, and maintenance company. Cornucopia Landscaping specializes in water-saving gardens which retain a lush appearance. You can have fruit trees, grapevines, fresh vegetables, and many beautiful ornamental plants while using very little water. In fact, an entire Cornucopia Landscaping garden sips only as much water in a season as a lawn of equal size gulps down in 1 week. Drip irrigation is the key to a water-saving garden. Are you looking for a beautiful flagstone pathway? Cornucopia Landscaping builds decks, patios, arbors, fences, retaining walls, planter boxes, and many other custom-built wooden structures. Serving Santa Cruz County since 1996. For more information or a consultation, call Davis at 831-335-1209. That's 335-1209. That number again is 335-1209.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service has two locations to serve you better wherever you live. Both locations feature full-service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
One specializes in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for fast, friendly, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service, now located in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road in Soquel Drive in Aptos Village, across from the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Give Juan a call at 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service full service.
Don't forget to ask Juan how KRXA listeners can save an additional 10% at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Sometimes things just make sense.
Sure, like buying a scooter when gas prices go crazy.
Or putting sharp business equipment in your office.
How does that make sense?
It makes sense to have the number one digital copier in America working for you, right?
Sure.
Well, that's how it makes sense.
I get it, but...
Here, try this.
Since 1981, this family-owned business has been about one thing, results, which is why Tri-County Business Systems is a Sharp dealer. Sharp is technology-driven. Between OSA, Open Systems Architecture, you can customize applications that promote efficient workflow. And because they're built to last, your total cost of ownership is reduced for long-term results. If you're a QuickBooks user, Sharp's OSA system allows you to quickly scan directly into your client's folder right from the machine. So call Tri-County Business Systems at 758-1474 and learn more today. Tri-County Business Systems, 758-1474. Solutions that connect with you. Tri-County Business Systems.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, the host of the new show, curiously enough, called The Scott Dick Show, weekdays, following the Peter B. Collins Show. Every evening from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll talk about local and regional issues, national and international politics, military and veterans affairs, and anything else that hasn't been lip-smacked to death already. So hang around after the Peter B. Collins Show and tune in to the gift you just can't return, The Scott Dick Show, weekdays, 6 to 8 p.m., where I'll shoot from the lip and take no prisoners.
Aloha, I'm Jay.
And I'm Ginger.
And we would like to invite you to our family restaurant, A Pizza Paradise, serving the biggest, best, and boldest pizzas from our Marina location at 215 Reservation Road. It's in the Marina Village Shopping Center across from Wells Fargo Bank. Try one of our specialty pizzas like the Ginger's Island Paradise, or for the meat lovers, a Meet Me in Paradise. We're open Tuesday through Sunday and offer a banquet room for up to 80 people. We deliver to Marina and CSUMB.
Call 582-9149.
It's A Pizza Paradise.
That's 582-9149.
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
One, two, three, My baby don't mess around because she loves me so, and if I don't push her.
We continue on the PBC show, talk radio you can dance to. 34 minutes into the hour. Brad Friedman from Bradlog with us till the top of the hour, and then he's going to plug in to the Mike Malloy Network and entertain the nation tonight as Mike enjoys a vacation. And Brad, thinking back to our interrupted conversation there when John Fund kind of ripped off his microphone figuratively and left our set.
Yeah.
You know, it was interesting to see once he realized that we had questions about the arguments that he makes in his book, instead of trying to prove his points and, you know, honestly discuss it with you and me, he seized on your slip when you called Hans von Spakovsky, John,
right,
and tried to act like, you know, that undermined your question or invalidated your question. And then he wanted to, he was screaming in the background that, well, I'm a journalist, he was a source. But we know that John Fund is more than a journalist.
We know that he's less than a journalist. Let's be clear.
Okay, that's a better way to put it.
Yeah.
He does practice some journalism. He's a columnist for the Wall Street Journal. Yep. But he also doubles as a Fox News contributor, and there his biases become pretty clear.
He's not a journalist at all, to be frank. He is a columnist, but he is more accurately described as a propagandist, a professional propagandist. And the fact that he didn't know who I was talking about when I said John von Spakovsky instead of Hans von Spakovsky.
Well, there's so many of them.
I know.
The phone book is jammed with von Spakovskys.
Right. And you would think he would be impressed the fact that I was able to say von Spakovsky. But no, he got confused because I didn't say John instead of Hans or vice versa. You know, when he then said...
But that's a nitpicking tactic to avoid the discussion.
He filibustered. It was a filibuster. He was in over his head. He knew it. He said, is this an interrogation or an interview? Well, you know, having been on Fox News all his life, I guess he thinks that interviews are when Sean Hannity says, hey, John, aren't those Democrats committing voter fraud everywhere? That's his idea of a tough question, I suppose. But, you know, when he was actually somebody held his feet to the fire. And guys like this are able to survive because this issue is so damn confusing because they confused the issue. They come out and they say, everybody ought to have a photo ID to vote because you need one to get on a plane, you need one to buy a pack of cigarettes, you need one to buy a beer. The fact is you don't need a photo ID to get on a plane. You don't need a photo ID to buy a pack of cigarettes. You know, but they're willing to lie about it. They've done it so much and they've put so much money into that lie that they've confused people so that even when a guy like Fund shows up on anybody's show, even Tom Hartman, who I love dearly and who knows this stuff,
mm-hmm.
he's still able to come through and bamboozle him with his nonsense. And nobody knows what to make of it. I mean, Fund went on Bill Maher. And Maher, to his credit, asked him about the Elections Assistance Commission and the fact that even though the study by the EAC, USEAC, was actually commissioned by Friends of Fund, they made the mistake of making it a bipartisan commission, and both of the people they choose to head this study found that there was little or no voter fraud anywhere. And Fund lied to Bill Maher, and he said, well, that was a study by a couple of consultants. You know, he said, I'll take an official study like the Baker-Carter Commission anytime. Well, the Baker-Carter Commission wasn't an official study. It was a privately run study by his buddies. So mm-hmm. they're just able to obscure everything, lie about everything, and frankly, there's not enough Peter B's or Brad Friedman's out there on the air to counter their BS.
Right. Yeah, and then they play games when we attempt to give them a hearing and argue with their conclusions. Let's go to Jenny and Salinas calling in, listening to KRXA. Hi, Jenny.
I just have a question. Is it true that in Canada, as long as you're a citizen, anybody can vote?
I don't know about Canada. Brad, do you have any info on that?
You know, I'm not sure. I know that, of course, we have certain states where we have same-day registration and so forth. It may be the case in Canada, and frankly, it should be the case here. If you're old enough to vote, you should get to vote.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say. I think the fact that you live in this country should guarantee anybody to vote, regardless of immigration status or citizen status. I think that's very fair, and I mean, if everyone's contributing to the community or to the nation, they should be able to have that.
Well, Jenny, I'm pretty liberal on the issues of immigrants and undocumented residents of the United States, but I'm a little old-fashioned here. I think you should be a United States citizen, not simply a resident, to vote in our elections.
I concur on that one for sure.
Okay.
All right, Jenny, thanks for your call. Now to Karen in Sacramento. Hello, Karen. How are you?
I just happened to be reading the Huffington Post while you guys were talking, and sure enough, they've got an article that was published at 4 o'clock today saying that Fox News is tagging Team Obama with a voter fraud smear, and they're tying him to the radical group called ACORN.
Yeah, of course they are. That's what they do. The nonsense about Acorn. Acorn has been heroically signing up millions of low-income voters. So, of course, Fox News and the GOP hate them. And they've said that though they're turning in all these fraudulent registrations. What they don't tell you is that Acorn, when they get any registration, has to turn it in. But they verify every single registration they get. They call the phone number, and if they can't get somebody, if they can't verify its authenticity, they flag it as fraudulent, and then they turn it in with that flag on there because they have to by law. Now, there's a lot of Republican groups out there who are doing voter registration who reportedly are tearing them up if they happen to be Democrats who they get to register. So that's fraud. The stuff that Acorn is doing it's a scam that Fox News is pulling, and I've been trying to raise hell about it. It's going to get much worse before it gets better. And one other point, by the way, related here. John Fund had said that he was against the GOP and their, contention that Jennifer Bruner threw out a lot of absentee ballot requests, which is not true. But the GOP went all the way to the Ohio Supreme Court to fight it. Fund says he disagrees with that. And yet the GOP today, in the name of Sarah Palin, put out a letter spewing this nonsense that Secretary of State Jennifer Bruner in Ohio, the Democratic Secretary of State, was trying to keep people from voting. They're liars. They don't care. They hate democracy. Can I be any clearer?
Hey, Karen, let me ask you something, because you're the one who brought up Fox here.
Yeah.
I received an invitation this afternoon during the program to appear on Neil Cavuto's Fox Saturday Morning Show. And I looked at this and I said, gosh, I go to yoga every Saturday morning. That's the only religious experience I have. And I said, Fox News or yoga?
Oh.
And we turned down the Fox News invitation.
Peter, send them my way. I'll be happy to show up on Fox News. I have no problem. If we don't take the fight to these guys, they're going to get away with the crap that they're getting away with.
Sorry, it's my day off. And I'm not going to give it up to the Fox
Slacker. You get a day off?
Monster, yeah.
Oh, man.
George in Monterey, join us on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hello.
Hi.
I've got two questions, one from Paranoia Land and one from Serious Question.
Okay.
The paranoia question is, I'm very much in favor of hand-counted ballots. I'm totally suspicious of the electronic voting machine systems around the country.
You and Homer Simpson, yeah.
My paranoia side is that if it looks like, first of all, I'm assuming that the systems are hackable, and I'm assuming they have been hacked. But my question is that if it looks like Obama might be leading strongly in all the polls, and that that McCain is pretty much down in the polls, that the voter turnout is going to look like a mandate to Obama and the Democrats, might the need for fraud be still existing? I'm saying fraud by the Republicans or manipulate the system. Might it still exist because they cannot let the mandate occur? At the same time, if it's closer, then they would win.
All right, George. Well, let's pause for a second here, and let's introduce Mike Connell and Mike Spoonamore.
Stephen Spoonamore.
Thank you. Hans Spoonamore?
I don't know who you're talking. What Spoonamore?
Yeah, there's so many
Spoonamore. I have no idea.
All right. So Spoonamore and Connell. Spoonamore has blown the whistle. Connell is this Republican IT consultant. Worked for the Bush family. Now has morphed over to the McCain campaign. And if people go to YouTube and just put the name Spoonamore in, no first names required, you're going to see hours of video as he describes what he predicts for the 2008 election. And Brad, he says the Republicans are going to grab it by 52% of the vote and three electoral college votes. He said that is his prediction.
Well, and, we've seen those kind of elections. The caller's talking about, this unbelievable mandate. We saw that in 2004, didn't we? I mean, these lines around the block, especially in urban neighborhoods in the state of Ohio, these were not folks lined up until 4 a.m. to vote for George W. Bush. So it doesn't matter what you see on TV. These guys can get away with anything they want. Unless we stop them. Let me be clear.
All right, George, your non-paranoid question?
Well, my non-paranoid question, it goes back to the Electoral College discussion earlier. If the Electoral College, it's a fraud question as well.
Mm-hmm.
If we eliminate the calculus for electoral votes, and so it's now only a popular vote, would that increase or decrease the element of fraud in the potential, you know, manipulation of the results?
Well, I'll go first here, and George, my impression, and by the way, I want people who've tuned in late to check out the website at, what is it, nationalpopularvote.com, nationalpopularvote.com. Those are the folks we talked to earlier in the show today. But, George, my feeling is that if you allow the popular vote to elect the president, it reduces the import and influence of the so-called battleground states. And so any attempt for fraud has to occur across the board. Right now, the Electoral College does make it easier, in my view, to focus on the critical so-called swing states or battleground states. Brett?
Yeah, you know, I hadn't thought about it in those terms, but, you know, it occurs to me that it makes it harder because, you know, if there's fraud going on, if you've got a national popular vote, you can sneak in those votes, you can flip those votes really anywhere you want. But so there's more compartmentalizing here, and it might be easier. Well, let me go this way. You said it might be easier because it's compartmentalized and they can know where to go. I might suggest it might be easier to protect it because it's compartmentalized and we know where to go and we know that, you know, we can look at Cuyahoga County, Ohio, and look specifically at that county where we might suspect trouble and, try to find out whether they gamed it or not. I don't know if we can do that in every county in the U.S. if you've got just a national popular vote.
Yeah, interesting point. George?
I'm not sure.
George, anything else?
No, I think it's an interesting question, and if there's an angle on any of these new thoughts about improving election integrity, it's not just, protecting the good guys, it's kind of preventing the bad guys.
Yeah, gotcha. Thank you, George. Good to have you listening. 888-5-PETER-B if you'd like to check in with Brad Friedman. We've got one more segment, and then he's going to sit in Mike Malloy's chair tonight and broadcast coast to coast. 888-5-PETER-B is our toll-free number. That's 888-573-8372. And if you're listening in Missoula, Portland, or Seattle, drop me an email, peter@peterbcollins.com.
And good afternoon. This is Hal Ginsberg with your final KRXA 540 traffic report for the week. Starting in Santa Cruz, Highway 1, we still got some problems there, this time at Wilder Ranch State Park. Heavy traffic, and there's an injured deer in the roadway causing it. Also on Highway 1, southbound, just north of Soquel Drive, we still got a collision on the board there. Moving now to Hollister-Gilroy, Highway 101 northbound, just south of Y Road. There's a gas can on the road slowing things down. And the problem at Uvis Road, just south of Croy Road, the collision there, upturned Honda, is still causing problems. Finally, in Monterey County, Highway 101 southbound on Front Street off-ramp, there's a collision slowing traffic, and south, actually, a Big Sur near Lucia, Highway 1 at Nacimiento, Ferguson Road, periodic closures due to a grass fire. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you real soon on KRXA 540.
This is the Media Matters Minute. I'm Ben Fischel. Political analysts hit the ground running and stumbling this week as the media dissected Thursday night's vice presidential debate. On PBS, Cokie Roberts implied that Senator Joe Biden misspoke when referring to Bosniaks as an ethnicity in Bosnia. Roberts apparently unaware that Bosniaks is the correct term for the largest ethnic group in Bosnia.
We talked about the Bosniaks. If she had said Bosniak, everybody would be making a big deal of it.
Unfortunately, both the Philadelphia Inquirer and the Boston Globe also falsely reported Biden's use of the word Bosniak as a gaffe. And on Fox News, Dick Morris gave his unique analysis of the debate.
The loser tonight in this debate was Hillary Clinton. Yeah.
But the most outrageous comment of the week goes to Michael Savage.
Why should we care about homosexuals trying to destroy families? Because the spiritual side of the downturn on Wall Street is directly related to the moral downturn in the United States of America.
For these stories and more, visit MediaMatters.org.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? white picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
Maybe I'm just like my mother. She never satisfied. We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. It's 9 minutes in front of the hour. Thanks for joining us here. Brad Friedman with one more segment for us here. Bradblog.com is where he operates 24/7. And, Brad, unless you have another story that you really want to talk about, I wanted to take our listeners to Florida for the multiple attempts to count ballots in a vote that produced an initial tabulation with a 17-vote margin. This is a circuit court judge race, a circuit judge race in Palm Beach County.
Yeah, no, that's exactly where I was hoping we would go. So smartly done, Peter.
Thank you.
And speaking of Florida, by the way, we'll have to get you some DVDs to give away. We're going to try to give some away tonight on the Malloy Show. But of Murder, Spies, and Voting Lies, a new documentary that tells the Clint Curtis story down in Florida.
And the efforts of Brad Friedman to break that story.
To tell that story over the years, yeah. And we're selling premiums of Brad Blog, signed copies. But other than that, we'll try to get you some so that we can give them away to callers next week. I'll try to give some weight tonight on the show.
Great.
But, see, you mentioned Florida, and that's what happens. Palm Beach, yeah, unbelievable what's going on down there. An election almost a month ago now, a primary election, the results, a circuit court judge election, 17-vote difference between the two candidates. They go in to do recounts. They can't get the numbers to add up. They've been counting and recounting now by machine because Florida does not allow them to count by hand, something that's been counted by machine already.
Mm-hmm.
And so just in the past 2 days, they did a test of 262 ballots. These are on machines made by the Sequoia Voting Systems Company, one of the worst in the country, although when you toss them in with Diebold and ES&S and Hart InterCivic, it's a very close call, which is the worst. But they found that, let's see, on the first two tests of 160 ballots, the machines accepted three ballots as good votes. Now, these were rejected ballots that were either overvotes or undervotes, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So they recounted them yet again on the Sequoia machine, 160 ballots. Three ballots were now counted as good after all. Then they tested 102 more ballots that should have been rejected, and the machines first accepted 13 ballots as good votes, and then 90 ballots as good votes. 90 out of 102 that had previously been rejected. The Sequoia voting machines can't count votes. They're counting the same ballots, getting different numbers every time they count them. And the sad thing, these are paper ballots, optical scan paper ballots. The sad thing is Sequoia has these machines all across the country, and the machines made by the other companies are just as inaccurate.
So what are your theories here, Brad, about why the same ballots run through the same machines? Because, you know, the argument that we've made about the touchscreen machines is that any attempt to recount them will just produce the same garbage as was originally presented.
Mm-hmm.
But here, you would expect we have paper ballots. We are running the same ones through the same machine. Should they not produce the same result each time?
Of course.
Or is it just my itty-bitty brain that can't really process all this?
I don't know. We should get John Fund and his itty-bitty brain on here to let us know if he's worried about this. Yeah, this seems to me to be a problem because most of the ballots in this country are counted on these very same optical scan machines, including absentee ballots that they're talking about. So there's no reason that they should read the same ballots differently each time, particularly not at that rate. I mean, 102 ballots, first 13 turns out are good ballots, then 90 on the same ballots. But we have seen this. We've seen these in studies where they actually are allowed to look at these private voting machines companies, private voting companies' machines, and they've tested them, and we've seen this before. They run the same ballot through three different machines and get three different results. That's your election system. And, you know, while everyone else is worried about the horse race and what Sarah Palin said, you can only imagine my hair on fire here as I try to tell people to pay attention to the track conditions, not just the horse race.
Wow.
And by the way, Sequoia is currently in court in New Jersey, where they've had problems with the voting machines. They're keeping an independent study, a court-ordered independent study that was supposed to be made public. They're fighting to keep that from going public. In D.C., Washington, D.C., where there was a primary a couple of weeks ago, 1,500 phantom votes showed up in a single precinct. Sequoia is currently lying about that in a public hearing today. Sequoia's in trouble. They're making me long for the days of Diebold, Peter.
Wow. Well, and, this surfaces right at the time when people are most concerned about being registered, voting, and having their vote count. And once again, Brad, we have to report that the people who are most likely to become victims of this are missing in action.
Yeah. They are. The Democrats are nowhere to be found. Occasionally they show up with a lawsuit up in Michigan, where they were using foreclosure lists to challenge voters. But as far as the Obama campaign, the DNC, they will tell you, oh, we've got thousands of lawyers ready to fight this on Election Day, which, of course, I try to tell them, it will be too late by them. They need to be out there screaming holy hell right now, so I don't have to. They got a lot more money. They're a lot louder than me. But if they're not going to do it, I guess it's left to me.
And we don't have time, but John Von Spakovsky is on line one.
Oh, John.
Brad, it is a Friday night for most of us. Apologies to our weekend listeners. But tonight, you are sitting in on the Mike Malloy Show, completing a run of the last few days. And I just wanted to give you a chance to tell us what you're going to be talking about tonight.
Oh, this, and we're going to... Yes, and actually right at the top of the show, we're going to have Ralph Nader on. You may have heard of him.
Yeah, he's been in the Central Coast area. He was in Santa Cruz earlier this week.
He's back in D.C., but he's getting onto a plane, so we may only have him for a few minutes, but we're going to talk to him, of course, independent candidate for president, and Cynthia McKinney, former Congresswoman, Green Party candidate. She is the Green Party candidate for president. Mm-hmm. She is the first presidential candidate to sign the StandingForVoters.org pledge that she will not concede an election until every vote is counted and counted accurately and all election challenges are satisfactorily concluded.
Well, give my regards to both of those candidates. And again, StandingForVoters.org is where you can find the pledge and ask your member of Congress or senator to sign it.
No, demand it. Demand they sign it, Peter.
Okay. Well, Brad, thank you very much for a great show today, and I hope you enjoy yourself on the radio tonight.
My pleasure. Always great to be here, my friend. Have a great weekend off.
All right, I sure will. I'm going to do yoga tomorrow morning, and I'll TiVo the Fox News Channel to see what I missed.
Yeah, I'll go on.
Happy trails to you.
Thanks for joining us for a great edition of the Peter B. Collins Show. I will take the weekend off. We'll be back at you very soon. And greetings to New Zealand. Got an email from a listener there just a few minutes ago.
And until then, who cares about the clouds if we're together?
Are you tired of paying $100 an hour for computer support just for the prompt to return? Hi, I'm Luke Ford, founder and CEO of My Computer Works. Whenever you have a major computer catastrophe or a simple question, give my U.S.-based computer technicians a call, and they'll remotely connect your computer and fix the problem for you. It's safe, secure, and you won't have to let a stranger into your home. Call now to receive 1 month of service free with a membership. Now let's hear from some of our satisfied customers.
They cleaned up the computer, and I sat there and watched everything going on. I was just having a ball.
So the convenience of having My Computer Works connect to my computer right then, fix it for me immediately, is priceless.
I was having a lot of major problems with my computer, and they basically evaluated the computer and went through and eliminated the problems I was having.
Call My Computer Works now, toll-free, 888-629-9618. That's 888-629-9618. 888-629-9618.
My Computer Works. Does yours?
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. By a margin of 92 votes, the House today passed the credit market rescue plan it rejected on Monday. The story from CBS News correspondent Bob Orr.
Things are really bad and we don't have any choice.
We're Tennessee's Zach Womp was one of 25 Republicans who switched from no to yes votes. Democrats had 33 converts, including Elijah Cummings of Maryland.
Sometimes you just have to do what is necessary at that moment.
President Bush quickly signed the bill after congratulating Treasury Secretary Paulson and Congress.
These steps represent decisive action to ease the credit crunch that is now threatening our economy.
But for the time being, the impact is only psychological. Reportedly, it will take the Treasury Department 4 weeks or more to start buying the bad assets that have virtually paralyzed lending. Stocks fell today. The Dow lost 157 points after the Labor Department reported that 159,000 jobs disappeared in September. CBS News economics correspondent Anthony Mason has that.
The worst month of job losses in 5 years could be an alarming turning point for the economy.
This may signal the shift from what has been a mild recession this year to a more severe recession.
And economist Lakshman Achuthan says the credit squeeze will mean mounting layoffs.
Is this rescue package too late?
Yes, if you're trying to save the economy, it's absolutely too late.
September's job losses came across the board, led by manufacturing, construction, and retail.
Analysts believe retailers will have their worst holiday shopping season in 2 decades. On this date, 13 years ago, O.J. Simpson was acquitted of murder charges in Los Angeles. Tonight, he's on trial in Las Vegas, and CBS News correspondent Steve Futterman reports the jury has gone into overtime.
There are indications that the jury may be making progress and could possibly be close to reaching a verdict. Jurors have requested to work into the evening. Dinner is now being brought in for the 9 women and 3 men. This is the first day of deliberations. O.J. Simpson and his co-defendant Clarence Stewart are charged with armed robbery and kidnapping, all stemming from a confrontation with 2 sports memorabilia dealers. Steve Futterman, CBS News, at the County Courthouse in Las Vegas.
45-year-old Thomas Daly, an apartment